Right now, it's time for your Monday breakfast with Nick Ferrari.
Thanks, Henry. At 7 o'clock on Monday, November the 24th, pressure continues to build on Andrew Mountbatten Windsor.
He hasn't cooperated with any of the US authorities over the years. In fact, ran away to Scotland to avoid a summons originally. So this doesn't surprise me.
So despite those pleas and requests, it looks like it's never going to happen. We'll get into more detail on that. Plus the news you've just heard with Henry Reilly, Lord Cameron, that prostate cancer diagnosis.
I'm going to do everything possible to try and keep the benefit, reduce the harms, and really move this question on so that we can deliver a screening program that benefits men in the future.
Those of you with good memories will recall that was just on Friday when Professor Hashim Ahmed, chief investigator of the Transform trial, told me that. More details. In other news...
The BBC chairman, Samir Shah, faces a make-or-break grilling by MPs over the BBC's edited Panorama documentary about Donald Trump. I'm LBC's Natasha Clark with everything to expect.
Plus, hailed as productive, the UK-Ukraine peace process, but sadly, in Kyiv, they're not seeing it that way. Those stories and more follow the 7 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, a leading employers group will call on ministers later to spare UK businesses from further tax hikes in Wednesday's budget. The head of the CBI will warn in a speech that firms risk getting locked in a stop-start economy if they're targeted again. Businesses are still reeling from last year's budget after bearing the brunt of £40 billion in tax rises. Conservative commentator Samantha Smith says Labour needs to listen to voters.
There is a lot of spending going on in areas that people are uncomfortable with, whether that's net zero or foreign aid. And so if they don't see a reduction in those areas to, you know, compensate for the fact that Britons are going to be paying more tax, it is going to do far more damage.
Ahead of the budget, the Chancellor has announced an above-inflation rise of £550 a year to the state pension from April. Rachel Reeves is also planning to extend a crackdown on benefit fraud. The Prime Minister has told LBC that Wednesday will include tough but correct decisions to protect working families. Sir Keir Starmer says the freeze announced yesterday on some rail fares in England is just the start to making life easier for working families. You can read more on the LBC app. The White House says talks with Ukraine have made meaningful progress in efforts to end the war with Russia. US and Ukrainian officials say they've identified clear next steps following discussions over the weekend. The joint statement lacks detail, but says any peace deal must uphold Ukraine's sovereignty. In his nightly address, President Zelensky confirmed signs of a breakthrough. His words are spoken by a translator.
Today, the negotiations in Switzerland will continue. The teams will be working practically until night, and we will be receiving further reports from them. It is important there is dialogue with the American representatives, and there are signals President Trump's team is hearing us.
Exclusive data shared with LBC shows nearly 250,000 children in England are leaving primary school overweight or obese. Analysis shows young people from the most deprived areas are most likely to fall into these categories. The government says it is spending £500 million to tackle child poverty. And Lord Cameron has revealed he's been successfully treated for prostate cancer. The former Prime Minister says he was urged to get tested by his wife earlier this year. David Cameron has also renewed calls for an increased screening programme for men most at risk of the disease. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen later at 95.39. It closed up 12 on Friday. The pound buys $1.30 and a euro 13. LBC weather cloudy with sunny spells for most. Some outbreaks of rain for the northeast of England with a high today of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
The Virgin Media Black Friday sale is here. Get 3 months of lightning-fast broadband totally free. That's caught your attention, like an elephant cruising on a truck through the bright lights of Bangkok. Switching is easy too. We handle everything for you. Yeah, that's Black Friday, the Virgin Media way. Visit virginmedia.com. Virgin Fiber areas. User speed and month full price depends on package choice. Ends 10th of December. Terms apply.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 4 minutes after seven, Monday the 24th of November. Coming up in this hour, if he thought it was going to go away, Andrew, formerly known as Prince, has got it totally wrong. More pressure now, and indeed, in a way, the Prime Minister seeming to add to that pressure, and I'll explain how in a moment. Prime Minister now actually on his way back to the United Kingdom. Let's hope his pilot can find the country. Elsewhere in the world, possibility of a breakthrough in Ukraine. I need to tell you, they're not that keen in Kyiv, but here's US Secretary of State Marco Rubio.
I don't want to declare victory or finality here. There's still some work to be done. But we are much further ahead today at this time than we were when we began this morning.
Helping people stay in work if they have conditions such as ADHD. Well, you subsidize their smartwatches or wobble boards. It's costing £320 million a year. We'll give you more details on that. Plus, in other news, the suggestion that police use faked claims to ban the Maccabee fans from that Aston Villa game. Speaking in the House of Commons last month, Culture Secretary Lisa Nandy defended the police's decision to ban those fans.
Let me be clear, this decision was not made in a vacuum. It's set against the backdrop of rising anti-Semitism here and across the world.
Going back to children, how nearly 250,000 10 and 11-year-olds are overweight or they're obese. And perhaps one of the more peculiar stories of November. Wool from gay sheep makes its debut appearance at a New York fashion show. I'll be asking, how can you tell if a sheep is gay?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
By the way, I should tell you that it would appear the Los Angeles designer who only used wool from gay sheep has provided articles of clothing to stars such as Madonna and Cher. So it's all the rage, but how do you know if you have a gay sheep? Stay tuned, it's later in the show. Now to other matters. In a way, the Prime Minister's heaped pressure on Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, formerly Prince, to give evidence to the US Congress about what he knows about Jeffrey Epstein. The disgraced royal has so far ignored continued requests by American politicians to come forward with information about the dead paedophile financier and his network of contacts. Now, there was a deadline set by the US House Oversight Committee. That has, Andrew Mountbatten Windsor has failed to meet that. Speaking with my LBC colleague Andrew Marr last week, Democrat Sohail Subramanian explained why congressmen want to see the former prince testify.
We're still going through the Epstein estate, but I'll say that every time we seem to get a set of documents, Andrew's name seems to appear over and over again. It's clear that he had a close relationship with Jeffrey Epstein. It's clear that he was involved in some way, and now we have a victim and perhaps others who have come forward and talked about him. So I just want to see the truth. We're flexible. We would be happy to work with him on different conditions under which he would talk to us. What I do want to know is everything that he knows about Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell, how they were able to conduct this criminal enterprise, essentially, and what his involvement was.
Now, the PM's interventions increased pressure on the already struggling former prince, but speaking with LBC last night, royal biographer Dr. Andrew Lowney says Andrew is still unlikely to appear in front of that committee.
I mean, he hasn't cooperated with any of the US authorities over the years. In fact, ran away to Scotland to avoid a summons originally. So this doesn't surprise me. And I think the fact that Keir Starmer is interfering in these royal matters, which is quite a departure. In some ways, you know, there's a good reasons for Andrew to be investigated on this side of the Atlantic. Everything's focused on that side. And I think, you know, pressure should be put on the Met to check if they are actually following up the demands for him to be investigated here.
Let's bring into the conversation Robert Jobson, who's royal editor for The Standard and has written the new book, The Windsor Legacy, A Royal Dynasty of Secrets, Scandal and Survival. I think I know the answer already, but Rob, I'm going to ask you, can you see any set of circumstances in which Andrew Mountbatten Windsor would voluntarily cross the Atlantic? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. He should, but he won't. The reality is, you know, if he could take the first, he would. The reality is he can't. He doesn't need to go over there. He doesn't need to give the evidence. And despite saying in the Emily Maitlis interview that he would welcome the opportunity to, you know, clear his name, this is an opportunity. He won't take it.
Your new book, The Windsor Legacy, A Dynasty of Secrets. What pressures is this causing with other members of the royal family, Rob?
The fact that they took this ruthless action against him, stripping him of his title, the fact that they want to try to distance themselves from him is evidence in itself. But the bottom line, he's the second son of the late Queen, and it can't distance themselves from him. And I think that the ultimate problem they've got is that this will not go away. And no matter how much distance they put between themselves and Andrew, unless he's able to clear his name, which clearly he's got questions to answer because he lied, it's impossible.
What do we know of the man himself currently?
Well, I don't think he's in a particularly good state. I mean, I've interviewed him a couple of times on other matters, and covered and been on trips with him, etc. Official, when he was working officially for the royal family. I don't think he's in a very good state mentally, but equally, you know, he's a proven liar. He had an opportunity to put his side of the case to Emily Maitlis, and he's been found out. So being put before a Congress, you know, I'm sure those close to him who are advising him would think he would be extremely weak in terms of giving evidence.
You say those who advise him. What do you understand to be the relationship between him and his brother, the King?
I think that it's quite clear that the King has had enough. I think that both he and William work together for the sake of the monarchy going forward to distance themselves from Andrew. There's probably a sense that the late Queen didn't go far enough and didn't deal with this matter decisively enough. But now, and as far as they're concerned, they've done as much as they can.
You and I, lastly, Rob, have been in the business roughly the same time. This story is not going to go away, is it? They need to be aware of that, Rob.
It's not going away, and I think that the fact that the Prime Minister has intervened, as Andrew Loney said, is a departure. I mean, obviously, when questioned, the Prime Minister, as a lawyer, gave a pretty standard answer, but the fact that he's having to say these things publicly does cause problems for the royal family.
Robert Jobson's new book is The Windsor Legacy, A Royal Dynasty of Secret Scandal and Survival. Thanks, Rob. 11 after 7. Listening, Eleanor Mills. Now, Eleanor was editor-director of the Sunday Times and former editor of the Sunday Times magazine, now founder of noon.co.uk. That's an online community and platform for women in midlife. Noon.co.uk. Eleanor joins me now. Is there a path of redemption for Prince Andrew? And if so, what is it, Eleanor? Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Nick. Well, I wrote some weeks ago in The Telegraph, actually, saying that there is a path back for him, I think, to redemption, if he goes to America and testifies and gives out everything that he knows about Jeffrey Epstein. It was interesting listening to your former guest. I'm sure it's kind of quite unlikely that Prince Andrew would do that. But the former Prince Andrew. But the only way back for him, I think, is to really show the remorse that he failed to show on the famous Emily Maitlis interview, and to testify to the Americans about all the other rapists he met at Jeffrey Epstein's different houses across the world. I mean, every time you turn on the TV or the radio, there's more evidence of Andrew having gone there. We've got this huge cache of emails about to be released in America, and it's only going to get worse for Andrew and for the rest of the royal family. So I think the only way he can get ahead of the story is to go out there, show that he's properly remorseful, understands what he did to these women and what all these other powerful men did as well, and actually testifies and makes amends in a real and a meaningful way.
And do you think, away from the commentariat of which you and I are members, fully signed up members, do you think listeners to LBC, people who are on noon.co.uk, regular people, could buy into that, Eleanor?
Well, I think so. The column I wrote in The Telegraph has had over 1,000 comments, and there's not a single one that disagrees with the idea that Andrew should have to go to America. I mean, there are some saying, the only thing which is different would be some normal people saying, well, he hasn't actually been found guilty of anything yet. But paying out £8 or £9 million, as we know that he did to Virginia Giuffre, is definitely a sign that there were things that he didn't want to come out, to put it at its most mild. And maybe he could get some kind of plea bargain with the Americans. Your senator earlier seems to imply that. And he might actually find that by doing the right thing and saying what he knows and bringing these other people to justice might actually rehabilitate him in the eyes of the world, other women, and maybe particularly his daughters.
Lastly, in the eyes of women, I mean, she would say that, Eleanor, because I find it very difficult. But do you have a shred of sympathy for Andrew?
No, Absolutely none at all. I think that he has behaved in an entirely entitled way his whole life. I don't think he listens to any advice. When I was the editor of the magazine at the Sunday Times, I sent John Arledge, very good interviewer, to interview Prince Andrew. And we had very long, incredibly interminable meetings with the palace about that. And then at the very last minute, he was meant to go on the cover of the magazine, and at the very last minute, he refused very petulantly to do a shot, because he just shot the magazine photograph.
Yeah.
And nobody around him had the gumption to say to him, look, we've spent weeks doing this, you've got to do this shot, this is the cover photograph of the magazine. And I thought that was a real sign that nobody around Andrew has ever stood up to him or told him things that he didn't want to hear, probably because he was the Queen's favourite. But everybody in life, I mean, my community, noon.org.uk, is all about becoming the person you always wanted to be at midlife. And people really can make massive changes. And Andrew could redeem himself if he does the right thing now and goes to America and testifies.
Ella Mills was, thank you, Eleanor, former editor of the Sunday Times magazine, as she referenced. That's noon.co.uk, Eleanor, thank you for that. The likelihood of him going over and any shred of sympathy. What if he did go over testify? Could he win you back? Now, someone else who's in the news is Lord Cameron, who shared the fact that he has a diagnosis of prostate cancer, it would appear, fortunately. It has been called early, and it was because of continual advertising and conversations, such as the one, not directly this one, by the way, I hasten to add, but conversations such as the one I was having on Friday with the chief investigator of the Transform trial, Professor Hashim Ahmed.
We know screening for prostate cancer saves lives, but it can come at a cost of the diagnostic tests can be harmful, and the treatments themselves can sometimes be worse than the disease.
And we'll have more on that directly after the 7:16 LBC News headlines read by Dominic Ellis.
A leading employers group will call on the Chancellor later to spare businesses in the UK from further tax hikes in Wednesday's budget. The White House says talks with Ukraine have made meaningful progress in efforts to end the war with Russia. An exclusive data shared with LBC shows nearly 250,000 children in England are leaving primary school obese or overweight. LBC weather cloudy with sunny spells for most, some outbreaks of rain for northeastern England, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The Blackwall Tunnel is closed southbound for the repair works, and as a result, there are lengthy delays on all the surrounding routes, but especially the A13 and also on the Aspen Way. Also in Walthamstow, the High Street remains closed in both directions at Vernon Road, and that's because of an ongoing police investigation. It's been closed since yesterday. On the train, Southern and Thameslink are currently at a standstill northbound between East Grinstead and Hurst Green, and that's because of a power problem. Southwestern Railway are delayed by about 20 minutes between Weybridge and Virginia Water. Trains are now going to and from Stansted Airport, but with various delays and cancellations.
LBC.
For GCSE and A-level success, one name stands out. Justin Craig. Small, tailored group tuition that really works. Justin Craig courses consolidate knowledge, boost confidence and improve technique for mocks, assessments and exams. Available in classrooms and online. One-to-one also available. With over 40 years' experience, Justin Craig has helped more than 100,000 students. For more details, visit justincraig.ac.uk. Justin Craig. Tailored for you.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. This is LBC.
Cybersecurity matters more than ever for businesses across the UK. LBC's been exploring how cyber attacks happen, who's behind them, and the steps you can take to protect your business.
Really simple things that a small business can do today is educating employees. It's imperative that we think about cybersecurity not just as a tech thing, but it's really a human thing. It's all about the human behind the computer and training your team to really be aware.
Watch the full interview on our free Global Player app. Thanks to BT Business, LBC.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
A Thameslink train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to recharge yourself and your phone. To stretch out, sit back, and when you hear "All change, please," you'll know you already have. Go with your flow with great deals at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
In her framing shop, Sally's got an eye for precision, plus a computer full of customer orders and precious memories. There are locks on the doors and sensors on the windows. But what's securing it all is BT Cybersecurity, with business antivirus, cloud protection, and security awareness training. It helps stop threats before they strike, keeping sensitive business data safe. Because protecting your business takes more than just toughened glass and a steady hand. Cybersecurity is everyone's business. Search BT Business Cybersecurity.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
It's 19 minutes after 7. Let me share with you the front pages of the newspapers. And not all of them, but most of them go with the Lord Cameron story that we're about to... By the way, as you know, I'm very privileged and proud to serve as an ambassador for Prostate Cancer UK, so we had a conversation about that on Friday. And if you're a bloke who's had a test, positive or negative, and obviously I hope the latter, or if it's your husband or your boyfriend or possibly your brother or whatever, what made you have the test? Lord Cameron's wife bullied him into it after hearing a radio report about prostate... No, bullied, I shouldn't have said that word. Encouraged, I'm sure encouraged him into it. How was it, your wife? Was it your girlfriend? Was it... I'll tell you what it was with me, having had one a long time ago, a sort of regular part of, as they call an MOT, as I told you, not that I knew him well, but I did know Eddie Jordan. And he died from prostate cancer. And he's older than me, not that much older than me. And I thought, it's time I had another one. So don't let it be someone who dies. And if you've had a test, how were you persuaded to do it? I'll take your calls probably from the fellas. But if you, as the wives, the girlfriends, whatever, the lovers, let me know. There we are on the front page of the Daily Mail. Cameron reveals he's had prostate cancer. He's now backing targeted screening, which is something actually within the charity we've been banging on about for some time. But that's quite a... That's some heavyweight support joining us there. Cameron shares prostate cancer fight is the front page of the Daily Telegraph. I hope you won't be upset. I do not intend to read any of the headlines about the budget, because I don't know whether you, like me, looked at the Sunday newspapers yesterday and just thought, this is, most of these are gibberish. No one actually knows. And what I find interesting is you look on the LBC app or you look at other online sites at how many people comment on budget stories, and it's not a lot, you know. Because you understand what it would appear most journalists don't, which is we don't know. We can speculate, which is mildly fun, but I'm not going to bore you with this paper or that paper or that paper or that bloody paper, none of which know what's going on. So credit to The Guardian. They have no budget whatsoever on the front page. Well done to them. BBC to overhaul standards panel as fallout from bias row continues. The chairman is up before that Commons Committee later today. My colleague Natasha Clark will be looking forward to that chronologically, I'm sure, independently as a journalist. Front page of the LBC app, quite rightly going with the David Cameron story. Let's pick another one at random, even if it's going to take me the rest of the day, because I'm not going to... Here we go. The Independent, British driver Lando Norris disqualified. Apparently the thing is wide open now, the Formula One, with what, two races, one race to go? It's got this wooden plank that goes under those cars. Extraordinary, isn't it? All right, so I want to talk about prostate cancer because Lord Cameron, very bravely, in a lengthy interview, by the way, if you want to find it, is in the Times newspaper, talks about how his wife was listening to a report and that's why he's had it. And, of course, as we tell you so many times, if you catch it early, you're in a good place. Enough from me. Let's turn to an expert. Pat Price is a professor and clinical oncologist and co-founder of the Catch Up with Cancer campaign. Professor, good to have you on. In this particular sphere of cancer, is it often the wife or the girlfriend who sort of pushes the bloke towards the doctor's door? How does it work, Professor? Good morning.
Good morning. Yes, no, you're absolutely right. Men sometimes not so good talking about these things, and it is often the wives. So great you're having that conversation about why people do it, because we've got to start getting men involved in the conversation.
Now, in the interview in the newspaper today, which is my job to read it, not yours, Lord Cameron says men are not very good at talking about their health. That is a sort of long-held belief. Do you believe that? Would you subscribe to that, Professor?
Yes, I think they're right.
And if so, men, why? Why are we so bad at it?
Well, men are sort of quite indefatigable, aren't they? I think perhaps men don't open up as much. Actually, very interesting. Remember the Royal Marsden did their bus that went round to where men are, you know, football clubs and all this sort of thing. they were getting men in and not only just finding prostate cancer, but finding high blood pressure. You know, so men, not very good. Come on, chaps, you can do it. You can think about your health.
Comment from you on what Lord Cameron says. We're embarrassed to talk about something like prostate because it's so intricately connected with sexual health and everything else. I sort of thought, well, this has happened to you. You should lend your voice to it. I would feel bad if I didn't come forward. Professor?
Wonderful. And thank you, him. And thank you, you, for doing all the work with the charity.
No, don't worry about me. Don't worry about me. And lastly, just to persuade probably the wives and the girlfriends or even the daughters, get it early. And relatively speaking, it's not a bad cancer to tackle. Professor?
Absolutely right. Sometimes needs less treatment, but also if the screening comes out on Thursday that high risk need it, trust them. Trust the science. They will do that if it saves lives. If it saves lives, go and get the test if suggested.
Always enjoy speaking with you. Thanks, Pat. Pat Price, Professor, Clinical Oncologist, co-founder of the Catch Up with Cancer campaign. I thought we'd probably have a lot of blokes, and we have. But again, if you are the wife who pushed the husband or the girlfriend or the daughter or sister, of course. Bob's in Chalgrove. Tell me your story, Bob. You're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning. In the summer of 2024, I decided to go and get checked because the King went public with his cancer diagnosis.
Although, of course, we don't actually know where his is.
No.
But no, you're absolutely right. So just to clarify that.
Correct.
Yeah, but go ahead.
But also, as you know, the royal family would never have gone public with their health.
No, well done, sir. Yeah, absolutely.
So I went and got checked, and then went through the PSA test,
yep.
and then the MRI scan,
yep.
which then led on to the biopsy, which then led on to another scan where they put atomic dye in you.
I've read about this. I know about this. Yeah.
And then they track
it through your body, don't they? Like analyse it, almost x-ray it as it goes through. That's what they're looking for, as I recall.
That's correct. And they said, I've got a very aggressive form of cancer. They established that at that moment in time it hadn't spread.
Right.
So it was localised. And then we discussed the options of surgically removing it or radiotherapy. And I discussed it with the oncologist who recommended radiotherapy, which I had last November.
So a year on, how are you getting on?
Well, I have every 3 months a stomach injection.
Right.
I've got two more to go, and from a PSA reading of 19, which was very high,
yeah,
I'm down to, in January it was 0.48, and in July 0.1.
So they're saying you're in a good place?
They're saying that I'm in a very good place because they caught it early. And funny enough, I had a conversation with... Because I tell everyone and his dog, go and get checked.
Yep, yep.
And I got a phone call from someone in my village who I had a conversation with.
Yep.
Who thanked me. He said because he had no symptoms and he'd come out the week before from having surgery to remove it. He had it and didn't know.
So I would
say to anybody, go and get checked. The earlier they can catch it, the better it is for you.
You be well, the King. I didn't think I was going to find that out. I thought I'd hear the wife, or perhaps, in my case, a mate died. Well, not a mate, but someone you know died. I never thought we'd have King Charles. So credit to you, sir. Be well. And obviously credit to King Charles. Just so that you're up to speed, what your PSA should be, and this is overall... but if you're 40 to 49, you'd be looking at less than 2.5 or below. 50 to 59, 3.5 or below. 60 to 69, 4.5 or below. But there are allowances. I'm just giving you... So that as you hear these conversations, you can work out what you just heard from Bob there, that, you know, he was quite a way up the chart. So well done to you, sir. Chris is in Alicante. 728. Chris is in Alicante. Chris, tell me how you found out. Good, if you found out. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick.
Alex,
it was actually a second pub.
I'm terribly sorry, Chris. Let's definitely take Chris the other side of the news and move him to a different part of Alicante. Lawrence in Wembley, your story. Lawrence, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning to you, Nick. Every year I have an MOT for everything.
Yep.
Prostate cancer, something you have to request. I think there should be national screening.
Well, that's what we're pushing. Sorry, I shouldn't say. That's what the charities are pushing for, Lawrence.
Yes,
there's a cost involved. That's the problem.
Well, cost. What's the cost of the life? But I requested it, and I have it every year. Fortunately, that's been quite low.
Good.
The other screening for bowel cancer, I never actually did the test.
Okay.
But then I did get bowel cancer. Unfortunately, I'm 5 years clear of that now.
Well, that's a positive. Lawrence, you're right. We do need a national screening programme. I think the heft that will be brought to the charity's campaign by Lord Cameron is more than considerable. Lawrence, thank you. Sarah's in Hanwell. Interesting to get a woman involved in this. Sarah, your observation. Good morning.
Yes, good morning, Nick. Nice to talk to you. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
It was, as I say, a comment. Early this year, my husband had a message through from our local GP surgery, which is in Hanwell, and it said they were doing a talk, the head doctor was doing a talk in the evening, I think 6 o'clock in the evening, on prostate cancer. I said to my husband, if they're decent enough to do that in the evening, we should go along and just get some information about it.
Yes.
We went along, and in total, including myself and one other lady, there was 10 people there. This surgery, I would guess, would probably cover easily 3,000 people. 10 people.
Did the medical professionals give an indication of how they reacted to that low turnout?
Not at all. No. Not at all. They said nothing, but it from the people, the gentleman that turned up, there was quite a lot of... They were very shocked. One or two gentlemen said, you know, my father, my brother has, my father and his brother have had cancer, prostate cancer. How often should I be being tested? Yeah. Doctor said to him, every 3 months.
Yeah.
The look on the gentleman's face was unbelievable. And there was clearly other gentlemen that suddenly realised they should be tested. They explained the risk factors. There was a number of the medical professionals who'd taken their time to turn out, and it was
terrible.
I said to my husband, I said, this is so disappointing.
Is your husband, he's had a test, is he? He's in good place?
Yes, he did, thankfully, all okay.
Well done. That's the important thing. Sarah, thank you for that story. I'll let you get on with your day. Clara in Brighton, how old do you have to be to get checked? My husband's 41. Clara, there is no... by the way, if the symptoms are, let's put this politely, he has to urinate a lot in the middle of the night, as men of a certain age do, that's a sign. Typically, they say 50. I'm not saying wait until 50. And also, if you happen to be black or non-white, then you are more prone then as well. So, Clara. Typically 50, but, you know, they're not going to turn you away if you have concerns. We will stay with this conversation. Also, coming up after the news...
The Telegraph has finally found a new home as the owner of the Daily Mail sweeps in with a £500 million bid. I'm Christian May from City AM, discussing this shortly with Nick.
Plus, a government minister later in this hour saying how they're going to cut electricity bills for thousands of manufacturers, up to 25%. Manufacturers' price cuts, regular folk like thee and me, price increases or lifts. How does that work? The minister joins us later. 7:31, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara on LBC. News headlines then. Dominic Ellis.
A leading employers group says the Chancellor must change course and avoid inflicting more pressure on businesses in her budget. The head of the CBI will warn later that Rachel Reeves must avoid death by 1,000 taxes on Wednesday. Senior US and Ukrainian officials will resume talks later on a plan to end the war with Russia. Both teams have given an upbeat assessment of negotiations following discussions in Geneva. And LBC has learned nearly 250,000 children in England are leaving primary school overweight or obese. Exclusive data shows young people from the most deprived areas are most likely to fall into these categories. LBC weather cloudy with sunny spells for most. Some outbreaks of rain for northeastern England, a high today of 11 degrees.
The budget on LBC.
Unemployment rising, growth flatlining, and a £20 billion black hole in public finances.
At the budget last year, I fixed the foundations. I put our public finances back on a firm footing and began rebuilding our economy.
How will Chancellor Rachel Reeves look at balancing the books?
They have given up trying to get the government to live within its means, and they have given up on not raising tax.
Join me, Sheila Fogarty, for the budget live and in full as the Chancellor sets out her tax and spending plans for the next year.
Then join me, Tom Swarbrick, live from Westminster for expert analysis to help break it all down, and of course, we'll take your calls.
Is my car going to be more expensive to run?
Will my council tax go up?
So what does this mean for my mortgage then?
The budget, this Wednesday on LBC.
My beans have been to Mexico.
They once went to Peru. My beans, they flew to Portugal, then went to Tuvalu. My beans were with me in Italy, then came with me to Greece. I slurped their sauce on Spanish shores. I nibbled them in Nice. My Heinz beans have seen the world. They've traveled far and wide because they are, as we all know, too good to leave behind.
Okay, let me stop you there, sir. You still have to check them into the hold.
Oh, all right then. Honestly.
Beans means Heinz.
I'm fulfilling more international orders thanks to working capital support.
Export insurance protects my business against the risk of not getting paid by an overseas buyer.
At UK Export Finance, we help businesses export with confidence. Between 2024 and 2025, we provided over £14 billion of government-backed finance and insurance to help businesses grow overseas. Search UK Export Finance to find out how we could help you win export contracts, fulfil orders, and get paid.
There's an old Thai saying that roughly translates as, the family who takes the internet on holiday can locate a less crowded beach. Particularly handy, my friends, if it's peak mating season for nippy little crabs. Pack the internet with an eSIM from Airalo. That's A-I-R-A-L-O.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345-6060-973.
7:35. Chris in Alicante, hopefully we've got you on a better line. We're talking about the diagnosis that Lord Cameron has prostate cancer. Powerful interview in one of the newspapers. The good news is that he's caught it early. The intriguing news is that it was down to his wife hearing a story on a radio station about the someone else actually having prostate cancer and realising the need to get tested. And I'm asking who spurred you on. And in the first call from Bob, it was King Charles. So there we are, all sorts of people involved. Your stories on that in a moment. If we're talking stories, one newspaper group seems to be buying me up. Another newspaper group. Here with details, Christian May, editor-in-chief at City AM. Tell us the deal, well, proposed deal. Christian, good morning.
Good morning to you, Nick. Yes, we were talking not that long ago, weren't we, about the sad state of affairs at the Daily Telegraph, being without formal ownership now for quite a long time. And the proposed deal by Redbird Capital for a £500 million sale fell apart last week when the firm in question decided actually they just didn't fancy the fight. So there was an awful lot of pushback from the Telegraph, among others, at the ownership structure of that proposed bidder. Well, now something a little more traditional has appeared. Sky News broke the story. Mark Kleinman, Sky News City editor, broke the story Saturday morning that the owner of the Daily Mail...
I think you mean Scoop Kleinman, don't you?
That's certainly what he's known as in the square mile. Absolutely. He was first out of the blocks with the news that the owner of the Daily Mail, DMGT, owned by Lord Rothermere, has swooped in with its own £500 million bid. This will end over 2.5 years of questions over the future of the Daily Telegraph. It will have to get through a regulatory hurdle, as you can imagine.
I was going to say, yeah, but there used to be something called the MMC 100 years ago, monopoly mergers, but if it's the buyer of last resort, presumably, they're in a good place, Christian.
Yeah, I think the expectation is that the government will be very keen for this to be settled without, you know, any other forms of complicated overseas ownership structures, etc. The DMGT obviously owns the Daily Mail newspapers, also owns the I newspaper, and indeed the New Scientist magazine. So I'm sure the Competition and Markets Authority will want to take a look at this. We're waiting to hear from any government spokesperson on the matter. But given the confusion that has reigned for so long over the ownership of this, I think that people, all parties, would be keen for the deal to proceed. And why do they want it? Well, it's understood that Lord Rothermere has always had a soft spot for the Daily Telegraph and has always had it in his sights. He was, in fact, involved in a previous bid as a 10% stake. Well, now he wants the whole thing. And, of course, they want to eye up US expansion, which is the trajectory for both the Mail and, it would seem, the Telegraph. And he said some very nice things about the newspapers, you can imagine, including the editor, Chris Evans, and they say they want to give him all the resources he needs to invest in the future of their newsroom.
Be fascinating to watch that. Talking about news, when I woke up and saw online that a billionaire is to quit the UK, I thought, who am I going to talk to at 7:33 to give me my business report? Christian's obviously left the country, but we've still got you. So who has said, or who is to say, adios?
Yeah, if I were to leave London, it would only be for another nice part of this country, Nick. We have said goodbye to the man who has topped the Sunday Times rich list for about, well, 8 times. I think no one else has been at the top spot more than that. We're talking about Lakshmi Mittal, the steel mogul, the Indian-born billionaire. Excuse me. He has a fortune estimated at just under £30 billion, and he has been in the UK for a very long time, but not anymore. We understand that the straw that broke the camel's back was the removal of non-dom status, and in particular, the way in which assets will be taxed under inheritance tax for people who had previously enjoyed that status if they choose to remain in the UK, and he has chosen not to. He will be based in Switzerland now for tax purposes and is buying up a property empire in sunny Dubai. I'm sure he'll spend plenty of time there and plenty of time in other parts of the world. He may spend plenty of time back in the UK, but he won't do so as a full-time citizen. It was the inheritance tax measures under the changes to the non-dom regime, we understand, that forced his hand. And he is just the latest and certainly most high profile of all those who have decided to up sticks and leave this country.
Christian Mayer's editor-in-chief at City AM. It's 7:40. Talk around the same time tomorrow morning. We've been talking, sir, about the police involved in, remember, banning those fans from the Tel Aviv team coming to Birmingham. Going to be speaking with a former Conservative MP and Attorney General on that. But we have got Chris in Alicante, who's been trying to get on the show now for about 20 minutes. We're talking in the light of Lord Cameron's diagnosis. Caught early, I hasten to add, with prostate cancer. Chris, and I'm asking how you decided to go and get your test. What's the story behind that? Chris, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning. Pleasure to talk to you, Nick.
Yes.
My journey is a bit of an odd one. I was at retirement age, that was 10 years ago, and I was talking to a guy in the pub who had just had the test, and he said, you should go yourself. And I thought I might as well. So my PSA was 38. As a result of that, I went to...
Remember, we're looking at 4.5, 3.5 is what we're hoping for. Just to remind the listeners where we want to be. Yeah, on you go, sir.
Then I went to Harley Street because I felt that was important to do. Mm. And basically, they said, after a biopsy and various other tests, they said, look, sorry, you're go home and make your will because you're, probably not going to make it more than a year. I thought, well, fair enough. I've had a good run. Might as well accept that.
How old were you? 60 what? 60 what were you?
65.
You were 65 right in time. Okay, yeah,
so I decided to, as a pal of mine had a birthday party for his 60th in Spain, and I was on the plane, and you get talking to the bloke next to you, which
yes,
I did.
Yes.
And he said, look, come and see me. I said, why is that? So he said, well, I'm the head of cancer research for Spain. So, which was an extraordinary coincidence.
Someone was looking after you, sport.
So I went to see him, and he cured me. Initially, he said, you're too old, and it's too dangerous with the level of aggression you've got to remove your prostate. So I'll give you radiotherapy. I had 72 sessions of that, and then a very, very strict diet, no starch, no sugar of any description.
Yeah.
For 6 months, and then 3 months of hormone treatment, and I'm fine now. Still alive, not dead yet. But one of the things...
How old are you, mate?
75.
That's 10 years.
One of the things I purposely don't worry about much these days, and this particular chap said, you know, that helps a lot, because most people go into panic, and it deregularizes your body.
I'm so glad we got you on a better line. I'm so glad you booked that flight and sat next to that man and that you came through. That's 10 additional years. Chris, be well. Stay off the starch and sugar, clearly. And thank you for your story. 7:42. More on that in a moment. This is after Lord Cameron's very, very personal, very powerful interview he's given to one newspaper, The Times, which also covers this story, by the way. West Midlands Police defending their decision to ban Maccabee Tel Aviv fans from attending a football match against Aston Villa in Birmingham after claims false intelligence was used. Officers said it was high risk for Tel Aviv fans to attend the Europa League match after collecting information about the disorder when the club had played in Amsterdam against Ajax. The force said their plan to ban fans from the game was proportionate and based on legitimate information. However, a report in the Sunday Times yesterday suggests Dutch police said the allegations raised in the paper, including claims attributed to Dutch law enforcement officers that Maccabi fans were highly skilled fighters, were incorrect. Some people are demanding answers, one of whom is Sir Michael Ellis, former Conservative MP and served as Attorney General, and has joined me now. I understand you and some colleagues have written to the West Midlands Police Chief Constable. What are you seeking to find out, Sir Michael? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Look, the fact of the matter is that... the police in West Midlands acted on bogus information. And that's now become clear. The Amsterdam police have told the Sunday Times that what West Midlands police said doesn't bear reality. And what West Midlands police said was that they were banning Maccabi Tel Aviv fans because of behaviour in public disorder in Amsterdam a year ago. But the truth is very different. And the government's own advisor, Nick, on anti-Semitism, the Prime Minister's own advisor, Lord Mann, has said the information was entirely fictitious. Now, this is a very serious matter, because if there's been invented intelligence here, we need to know why a British police force acted on invented intelligence, and we need to know where they got that information from. So this is a big if at the moment, but the police haven't answered those questions as yet. There's now a big differentiation between what Dutch police are saying actually happened in Amsterdam, so you'd think that they would know, it's their police force area, and what West Midlands police say they acted on with regards to the Tel Aviv match. So there's great concern, Nick. The Board of Deputies of British Jews have said that they're extremely troubled by these reports. And the fact of the matter is that if our police force has been duped, then we need to know how and why that happened and where this information came from.
Can I ask you, if you were Jewish, living in the jurisdiction of West Midlands Police, how you might feel this morning, Sir Michael?
Well, I think that all Jewish people in this country are already feeling very concerned, because there is a deep concern, and has been now for some years, that Jewish people have not been treated equally by the police in this country. If they're subjected to abuse, which they have been, by the way, in record numbers, the numbers of anti-Semitic incidents have increased exponentially in the past couple of years, because, of course, people don't differentiate between Israel and Jews. And if they are subjected to Saturday marches, as we know have taken place almost every week in London, the Jewish community already feel very concerned about that. People are considering their position in this country and whether to emigrate. We even saw a disturbance outside a synagogue yesterday in London. Right. So the reality is, Nick, there's a great concern already, but what's happened here in the West Midlands Police needs to be investigated. Right. There are people now starting to call for West Midlands Police to be put in special measures. I do think that the Home Affairs Select Committee in Parliament needs to look at this, summon the Chief Constable, and find out exactly what's happened here.
Grateful for your time, Sir Michael Ellis, former Conservative MP, also served as Attorney General. Coming up after the news, we will hear more from the current government, how they're going to cut energy bills for businesses. We'll try and get the rationale behind that. 7:46 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
A leading employers group says the Chancellor must change course and avoid inflicting more pressure on UK businesses in Wednesday's budget. Senior US and Ukrainian officials will resume talks later on a plan to end the war with Russia. And the former Prime Minister Lord Cameron has revealed he's been successfully treated for prostate cancer. LBC weather, cloudy with sunny spells for most, outbreaks of rain in northeastern England, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Traffic is being held on the M3 northbound just before the M25. There's been an accident and also an oil spillage, and it's causing delays of about 2 miles on the approach. Now, on the southern stretch of the M25, there are delays of about half an hour going clockwise to Junction 6 at Godstone. A car broke down earlier, has now been recovered, but there are still delays back towards Junction 5 at the M26. Now, in London, there are severe delays around the Blackwall Tunnel. It remains closed southbound for these repair works. There are huge delays on the surrounding routes, especially on the A13 and in the Silvertown Tunnel. And on the train, Southern and Thameslink are a standstill going towards East Croydon.
This is LBC.
For people living with dementia, Christmas can be confusing, overwhelming, heartbreaking. Families are often left to cope alone. But you can help a family reimagine Christmas. Donate to Alzheimer's Society and you can help provide practical support, expert advice and crucial companionship this Christmas. It will take a society to beat dementia, and we can't do it without you. Search Alzheimer's Society and donate today.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973 LBC.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helped advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it, and there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
Great to see you back at Specsavers. Okay, could you read out the letters on the wall for me?
Yep. D-E-A-L-S? Yeah, D-E-A-L-S. Deals.
Oh, right. Our Black Friday deals are eye-catching, but the letter chart's over here.
Oh, sorry.
At Specsavers, we've got all sorts of unmissable Black Friday deals, like up to £50 off one pair of designer glasses. Offer ends on 7th of December 2025. Conditions apply. Ask in store for details.
They did it again. Flour instead of flowers. On my birthday. And 95 minutes late. But it's hard to leave when you've shared so much. Your postcode. Your gluten intolerance. Then I saw it. 25% off your first Ocado shop. Plus, free delivery. And I just knew I'd found the online supermarket of my dreams. Ocado. Life delivered. Geographical restrictions. Min spend £60. Max saving £20. Charges and Christmas restrictions apply. New customers only. Terms at Ocado.com.
For GCSE and A-level success, one name stands out. Justin Craig. Small, tailored group tuition that really works. Justin Craig courses consolidate knowledge, boost confidence and improve technique for mocks, assessments and exams. Available in classrooms and online. One-to-one also available. With over 40 years experience, Justin Craig has helped more than 100,000 students. For more details, visit justincraig.ac.uk. Justin Craig, tailored for you.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
7:50, 10 minutes before 8, we will return to, with respect to everyone else involved in other stories, the biggest story of the day. It's not every day that a former British Prime Minister admits in a newspaper interview he has prostate cancer. That's the news from Lord Cameron. The good news is he's caught it early because he was encouraged, I'm using that word rather than bullet, encouraged by his wife. I'm asking you fellas, if you've had a test, I hope it went well, but were you encouraged by your wife, your possibly your daughter? Or in my case, of course, it was the fact that I knew someone who died from it. I'm not saying that I knew him particularly well, but I did know Eddie Jordan, and he succumbed to it, so we'll come back to that important conversation in a moment. But with the budget, literally now, we can almost count down in hours, we can certainly count down in days. The drive is on to bring about economic growth, and some of the Chancellor's senior colleagues have some ideas and schemes for that. And let's turn straight to Labour MP, Business and Trade Secretary Peter Kyle, who joins me now. You want to help industries, specific industries, with their energy bills. Good to have you on board, Secretary of State. What are you telling us today? Good morning.
Really good to be back with you again, Nick. Yes, that's right. We're launching the British Industrial Competitiveness Scheme. We'll call it BICS from now on, so I don't have to keep saying that. But that's a scheme whereby we're going to be consulting on choosing 7,000 businesses so that we can lower their energy costs by 25%. You know, that's going to be a huge discount so that those manufacturing businesses can lower the cost of their production cycle. They can start investing that money, obviously, in their businesses and lowering the costs to consumers, being more competitive on the international stage. You know, this will be a big step forward. This is one of the things that business has been crying out for, and it's one of the areas we can start to act on.
So cuts of, did you say 25%?
That's right.
Right. How do you clarify, how do you qualify to be within the BICS scheme?
And that's what we're consulting on now. So today we're starting an 8-week period of consultation, and then I'll legislate after that to make sure we get the scheme right. But we're working with business. I mean, there are 150,000 manufacturing companies in this country. You have to be a manufacturer to qualify, but you also have to be aligned with our priorities as a country. We have to choose, I'm afraid. We can't give this discount to everyone. But you know that the number one objective of this government is economic growth. Mm. So we will be choosing those companies who are growth orientated, for whom the discount can have the biggest impact on their profitability, their ability to grow as a country, as a company, because we need to get that growth into the broader economy. So we'll be consulting with businesses as to how we choose it. And of course, this comes on top of the supercharger I announced and spoke to you about a few weeks ago. And it comes on top of the transition that we're making to lower the price of electricity overall into the long term. But we know businesses need action in the short term, medium term and long term.
How much is it going to cost? Who's going to pick up the shortfall?
Well, we've found inefficiencies in the system. We've been working with that, and we're going to be consulting and working within the department, Ed Miliband's Department for Energy and Climate Change. We are sure that there are more efficiencies in the energy system on the government side. This does involve going very down deep into the weeds of how we calculate price and how we generate costs within the government side. But we think we can find about £500 million worth of savings there, and that is what we want to pass on to these businesses.
Okay. In the briefing note, it suggested that we might be looking at businesses such as the automotive and aerospace industry. I imagine they could feature in that. One of which would be Secretary of State Rolls-Royce. Their last 6 monthly profits was £1.7 billion in profit. Meanwhile, for my listeners and your voters, the price they pay for their energy has gone up. Why are we subsidising a company that makes nearly £2 billion in 6 months and Mrs. Jones and Clapham's energy bill is going up? Do explain.
Well, I like the way you chose a business that we haven't selected yet.
No, well, I take the automotive and aerospace industry. I don't think it's a bad idea. Rolls-Royce, as you'll know, they make a lot of engines.
That's right, they do. But we're also talking about companies who are right up there in the northeast of England, in Sunderland and other parts of the country, where they're providing fantastic jobs. But also, we need to make sure that those businesses are more efficient and effective so that they can take more advantage of those great trade deals that we've struck and the export markets out there, and also lower the cost of things like cars and other products and services for people as well. So this isn't just about putting money into business. Business therefore provides products and services to people, and to do so at a lower price.
Yeah, but some of these businesses will be making profits. You know that as well. Unless you're going to tell me that no business making a profit will qualify, which I doubt you're able to say that.
Well, as I said,
no, you're not. Why should Mrs. Jones pay more and businesses get it cut by up to 25%? I can't see the rationale under a Labour government. I'm missing something.
I'm here as a business secretary talking about what I'm doing for business to lower the cost of doing business so we get economic growth into our country. The only way, Nick, as you know, because you lecture me on this as well, in public and in private, the only way we break out of this cycle of high tax and low growth is to get businesses growing in our country. So that means we have to lower some of the costs for some of those businesses, and we will be focusing on those high growth businesses. We've got an 8-week period ahead of us now where we're going to be consulting with those businesses so we can choose the right ones so that we can prioritise growth. And believe me, growth in businesses, growth in our economy will benefit everyone, including the person that you just mentioned.
Mrs. Jones in Clapham, or
anyone.
Well, she could be in Hove, of course. You could have a Mrs. Jones in Hove, Mr. Kyle.
We've got lots of them in Hove. I've met lots of them.
All right, OK. Other matters. Business and Trade Secretary, happy with the Mail deal for the Telegraph in the media sector?
I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with all of the deals that are going on at the moment, but I'm looking very closely at what might happen to the Telegraph. I know that there's a period that's unfolding at the moment that is being led by Lisa Nandy in the DCMS department.
Mm. But you'd be relaxed with that, the deal, the Mail buying the Telegraph?
I would be relaxed with any deal that gets past the Culture, Media and Sport department led by Lisa Nandy. I'm very comfortable with those things. Right. I know she's making the right decisions.
OK. Again, you could sideswipe this one, but the latest job figures, we're losing 1,000 jobs a day, over the basis figures show. I know your business and trade secretary, not work and pensions, but why is it so calamitous in the employment front with your government?
There is a lot of churn in the employment market at the moment, but overall our economy has delivered an extra 330,000 jobs. There is high growth in job creation in our economy, but there is churn, and I accept that. There is disruption in the economy, and there will be disruption into the future. There's a lot of transition in the economy right now, and we're making sure that we're investing in people, in skills, in the broader economy, and, of course, in the education system as well. The creation of Skills England is there to keep the education system, not just for young people, but the lifelong learning system as well, is there so we can make sure that people have the skills in a fast, rapidly evolving economy, because Britain's economy is at the forefront of global change, which means we can seize all of the great opportunities out there, but it does mean we need to make sure that nobody gets left behind, and that is our commitment to people.
Very much back as your business secretary brief. How do you respond to the charge that no one on the Labour front bench has actually ever run a business?
Well, you're talking to somebody that has. I've founded a business with my best friend. I worked for the body shop. Anita Roddick, when I was 18, was the person that turned my life around. My dad left school at 14, went to the Navy at 16. He was a door-to-door salesman in his 20s. Excellent. He ended up working his way up from door-to-door salesman to owning the company. Business is in my blood. I see what it did for my family. I saw what it's done for me personally. And there is nobody that has more respect for what British business can do and does do every day for people up and down this country.
If you think this is a cheeky question, just say so. But with the news concerning Lord Cameron, and I'm sure you, like me, wish him nothing but a speedy recovery, might I ask, have you had a test, Secretary of State?
Well, firstly, let me just pay tribute to David. Apparently, he has made a full recovery, and yep. I'm grateful and I'm pleased for it. I have had a test in the past. I have, and I take very seriously the need for preventative care, even though it does mean you have to take time out of your day from time to time, and it feels, when you feel healthy, yes. I know it's hard to prioritise it, but I urge people to prioritise it.
Finally, how did you respond to that report in one of the newspapers yesterday, the Sunday Times, that the reason that Angela Rayner bought, bought her house in London is that you are going to be elevated, which is only correct, of course, but that you will be elevated to the House of Lords and step aside from the good folk of Hove and Portslade and let Angela Rayner have a safer seat? Secretary of State.
You're always the person that asks these questions.
Well, they pay me a lot of money, that's why.
I laughed when I read this speculation on social media over the summer. But now I see it printed in newspapers. It's frustrating me because a lot of work went into me winning that seat in Hove, not just by me, but by hundreds of other people in that campaign, because I took the seat off the Tories. A lot of
with
work.
With a thumping majority, of, Mr.
Hundreds,
Kyle,
well, we turned it from an ultra-marginal seat to one where I enjoy, thanks to the good people of Hove and Portslade, a 20,000 majority. The idea that I would turn my back on that community simply for a deal that's about me and not in the interest of that community is simply for the birds. It's not who I am. It has not been spoken about. I told the journalist who wrote that story that was the case, and they still went ahead and printed it. So when you hear me getting accused and being challenged on speculation about the budget, bear in mind I flat denied a story to a journalist, and it still appeared in the paper afterwards.
I have warned you before, don't speak to journalists, Mr. Carl. I have told you this. Thank you for your time. Big energy boost then for growth. Vision setting out how electricity costs for over 7,000 British businesses to drive in employment, drive growth. Peter Carl, Business and Trade Secretary, thank you for your time. You've taken us to 8 o'clock. LBC News headlines next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock, a leading employers group will call on the Chancellor later to spare business from further tax rises in Wednesday's budget. The head of the CBI will use a speech to urge Rachel Reeves to tackle growth obstacles instead. UK firms are still reeling from last year's budget after bearing the brunt of £40 billion in tax rises. Lisa Kempster is a business owner in Halifax and says economic uncertainty is leading to a drop-off in footfall.
The impression I get from talking to people is there's a lot of uncertainty. People are uncertain, but when you ask them about what they're uncertain about, they're not really sure. There's just a general feeling of uncertainty and being cautious.
Yesterday, a former Bank of England chief economist said a fiscal fandango is causing economic paralysis among businesses in the lead-up to Wednesday. The business minister, Peter Kyle, has just told Nick that they will be supporting businesses at the heart of Wednesday's announcements and beyond.
The only way, Nick, as you know, because you lecture me on this as well, in public and in private, the only way we break out of this cycle of high tax and low growth is to get businesses growing in our country.
Speaking to LBC, Sir Keir Starmer has stressed that the economy is turning a corner for the better. The Prime Minister says Wednesday's statement will include tough but correct decisions to protect working families. You can read more of Sir Keir's exclusive comments on the LBC app. In other news this morning, senior US and Ukrainian officials will resume discussions on a plan to end the war with Russia. Both teams have given an upbeat assessment following talks in Geneva over the weekend. The statement overnight lacks detail, but says any peace deal must uphold Ukraine's sovereignty. Senior officials at the BBC are due to be questioned by MPs regarding the recent row over editorial standards. The corporation's chairman will appear alongside board members at the Commons Culture Committee later today. David Cameron has revealed he's been successfully treated for prostate cancer. The former Prime Minister, who received therapy earlier this year, says he wants to support screening calls for men at high risk of the disease.
And Tottenham boss Thomas Frank has apologised to the club's fans after their 4-1 defeat to Arsenal in the North London derby yesterday. The win moves the Gunners 6 points clear at the top of the Premier League. In the City a short time ago, the FTSE 100 reopened at 95.39. It closed up 12 on Friday. The pound buys $1.30 and a euro 13. LBC weather, cloudy with sunny spells for most today. Rain for northeastern areas, milder, a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 4 minutes after eight, Monday, November the 24th. Coming up in this hour, we return to the biggest story of the day. It's not every day that a former Prime Minister of the United Kingdom says he's had prostate cancer. He is recovered, well, he has recovered, but of course he'll now forever have to have checks. And we're taking your calls as to how you found out. In other news,
the BBC chairman, Samir Shah, faces a make-or-break grilling by MPs over the BBC's edited Panorama documentary about Donald Trump. I'm LBC's Natasha Clark with Everything to Expect.
Coming back to health stories, the news, nearly 250,000 10 and 11-year-olds are overweight or bordering on obese. Let that number hang in the air for a moment. 250,000? Sarah Woolnough is from the health charity The King's Fund. They produce the figures.
They have a third of primary age children leaving age 10 and 11 overweight or obese is storing up huge health problems for children's futures.
Plus, a story that at first might sound a little army. But the gay sheep hit the catwalk in an LGBT knitwear show. Wool from Gay Sheep has made its debut appearance in a New York fashion show. The designer says he'll only work with wool from a gay sheep, or gay sheep plural. But how can you tell if your sheep is gay?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
And we do try and make your day brighter, so before we go into a conversation on prostate cancer, I should tell you that the fashion design has been called I Wool Survive, which is just brilliant. Wool from gay sheep, I Wool Survive. I love it. It's late in the show. How to tell if your sheep, singular or plural, is or are gay. Now to other matters, and this has made, as I said, front page news, the fact that Lord Cameron has shared his fight successful, I need to stress, against prostate cancer, and pointing out that it was his wife who heard a report on a radio, actually people talking about it, decided, come on now, David, you need to get this checked, and he did, and he had it, and he has recovered and is recovering, and let's hope it is a long, long recovery that he enjoys. Now, as you know, and I've made no secret of the fact, in fact, I've probably got my badge on me somewhere. I should probably put this on, actually. I've got it somewhere. That I'm an ambassador of prostate cancer. Where the hell is it? That I'm an ambassador of prostate cancer. And speaking with me on Friday, as the trial launched, Professor Hashim Ahmed, who's running the trial, the Transform trial, told me why screening could be so valuable in combating the cancer in men.
We've seen over the last few months, the debate has been raging. Part of society has been pushing for screening for prostate cancer. Others have been warning that it's not quite as simple as that. And we need evidence, we need data, and Transform will fill that evidence gap, because we're not sure whether it's the right thing to start a population health intervention like prostate cancer screening. The reason for that is we know screening for prostate cancer saves lives, but it can come at a cost of the diagnostic tests can be harmful, and the treatments themselves can sometimes be worse than the disease. So we need to, in Transform, look at new ways of screening for prostate cancer that might involve a PSA test at various levels. It might involve a spit test, which looks at genetic risk, and importantly, a 10-minute MRI scan, what I call a prostagram, to see if we can address those harms, reduce them as low as possible. We can't eliminate them, but reduce them as low as possible and retain the benefit of screening for prostate cancer, saving lives. I think this trial could show that we could save even more lives, because currently we know that the PSA test can actually miss important cancers as well, which we often don't talk about.
Now, of course, that was prior to the news about Lord Cameron. In the previous hour of the show, so that was on Friday, in the previous hour of the show today, I spoke with oncologist Professor Pat Price. I asked her if it was common for it to be the wives, girlfriends, partners to urge their other halves to come forward for testing.
Men sometimes not so good talking about these things, and it is often the wives. So great you're having that conversation about why people do it, because we've got to start getting men involved in the conversation.
Now, in the interview in the newspaper today, which is my job to read it, not yours, Lord Cameron says men are not very good at talking about their health. That is a sort of long-held belief. Do you believe that? Would you subscribe to that, Professor?
Yes, I think they're right.
And if so, why? Why are we so bad at it?
Well, men are sort of quite indefatigable, aren't they? I think perhaps men don't open up as much. Actually, very interesting. Remember the Royal Marsden did their bus that went round to where men are, you know, football clubs and all this sort of thing. They were getting men in and not only just finding prostate cancer, but finding high blood pressure. You know, so men, not very good. Come on, chaps, you can do it. You can think about your health.
Well said, Prof. That was Lady Cameron, of course, Samantha Cameron, who was listening to a radio report featuring a story with Nick Jones, the founder of the Soho House Empire, explaining how a prostate test had successfully picked up his cancer and successfully treated it. Lord Cameron was due a health check, so Lady Cameron says, you're going for that health checkup, you should ask about this. And he did. Lord Cameron is 59. I asked for how you decided to have your test, and hopefully with positive, because I'd remind you again, if you're going to get a cancer, and I sincerely hope you don't, but if you're going to get a cancer and you're a bloke, it is one of the better ones to get if you catch it early. These are some of the stories you told me, starting with Bob in Charlesgrove.
In the summer of 2024, I decided to go and get checked. They went through the PSA test and then the MRI scan, which then led on to the biopsy, which then led on to another scan where they put atomic dye in you. They said, I've got a very aggressive form of cancer. Oh. They established that at that moment in time it hadn't spread, so it was localised. And then we discussed the options of surgically removing it or radiotherapy. And I discussed it with the oncologist who recommended radiotherapy, which I had last November. They're saying that I'm in a very good place because they caught it early. I would say to anybody, go and get checked. The earlier they can catch it, the better it is for you.
Lawrence in Wembley.
Every year I have an MOT for everything. Prostate cancer, something you have to request. I think there should be national screening. Yeah, I requested it, and I have it every year. Fortunately, that's been quite low. The other screening for bowel cancer, I never actually did the test. Then I did get bowel cancer. I'm 5 years clear of that now.
Chris, you're on the radio.
And my journey is a bit of an odd one. I was at retirement age, and I was talking to a guy in the pub who had just had a test, and he said, you should go yourself. And I thought I might as well. So my PSA was 38. They said, after a biopsy and various other tests, they said, look, sorry, you're going to go home and make your will. You're probably not going to make it more than a year. I had 72 sessions and then a very, very strict diet. No starch, no sugar of any description for 6 months, and then 3 months of hormone treatment, and I'm fine now.
He's also 75. So Chris added 10 years to his life there. That is why it's so important. Coming to you, of course, in just a moment, I just want to feature these comments that are coming, because I haven't done enough of social media. Ian, you'll be the first caller. Dawn in Beckenham, you've been listening for some while. Nick, I remember so many years ago you had a live on-air prostate test. There was much hilarity because everyone thought it was going to be rather invasive. But no, you had your finger pricked, a spot of blood taken. Think how you might have saved lives. Well, I know my colleague, LBC colleague Ian Dale, again, I don't think he had his PSA done on air, which I did. I don't know. Why did I have that, man? Why did I do it on air? I don't know. Difficult to tell now. But I know that he's become very involved, and he's, I think, had some callers phone him back and tell him that they're very grateful. Mandy says, I got myself checked for prostate cancer because two of my colleagues were diagnosed with it. One, unfortunately didn't make it. The other lived. Oh, here we go. Keith, I listened to you talk about prostate cancer a few months ago. Due to poor flow, checked with a blood test in Scotland, told my results within the norm, immediately felt at ease. Thanks for the heads up. Let's take your calls. Ian in Ruislip. Ian, tell me your story. Good morning.
Hi, Nick. Earlier this year in June, I was driving back and forth to work over in Heathrow.
Yes.
Just a short journey. I was listening to Ian Payne in the morning and also Talk Sport as well, as depending on what Ian's
I've heard of it. They talk about David Beckham's left foot endlessly there, yes.
But constantly, for a real short period, I was being sort of, I was hearing about PSA, prostate cancer, getting the PSA test done.
Yeah.
So I did a blood pressure monitor thing at work, which was slightly elevated. So I thought, you know what, I'm going to go and get that checked at the GP. And then I was coming home, listening to the radio again.
Yep.
Heard the thing about prostate cancer. Thought, you know what, I'm going to get my PSA test done as well at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Am I going to hear good news? What is it?
A few days later, I got a missed call from the GP. Then I got an email saying I was being referred to an MRI. So anyway, I got diagnosed with prostate cancer in June.
Mm. What was your level? Can you remember what your PSA was?
It was 4.2, so it wasn't massively high.
Not at all.
But I was told it was my Gleason score, which is the grading.
Right.
Was 4.3.
Right.
So,
okay.
It was slightly aggressive, but when they told me, they said that if it was in 2 years' time, this is the major thing, if it was in 2 years' time, we'd be having a completely different conversation.
Oh, for goodness sake.
So I had the PSA test done really just on a whim, really. It was sort of in my head from the radio being told about it. And I didn't have any symptoms. I have a wee a few times before I go to bed and a few times in the morning, but nothing really.
No, you and me both, I think.
Yes,
yeah. But now you're good. You just have to be monitored now, right? Is that what we're saying?
No. So because of mine was a slightly aggressive type, I had to have the operation. So I didn't have the full prostate removal. I was lucky. I was in a good position where it was local.
Yes.
And early as well. So I had a HIFU surgery, which is a ultrasound burning of the cancer, so it treated purely the cancer itself.
Oh, right.
So I'm 7 weeks post that. So, and the recovery has been brilliant. So it's been really good.
Well, that is positive. Isn't that interesting? Someone else was listening to the radio, possibly me, possibly, I don't care, that other radio station, if it helps save your life. That's fantastic. Ian, be well. Thank you. We'll stay with that conversation. Staying with Health Matters, coming up after the news, nearly a quarter of a million 10 and 11-year-olds are verging on obesity. We'll give you details of that exclusive report after this. 8:16 LBC News Headlines. Dominic Ellis.
A leading business group is set to warn the Chancellor to change course and avoid inflicting more pressure on UK firms in her budget. The White House says talks with Ukraine have made meaningful progress in efforts to end the war with Russia. And exclusive data shared with LBC shows nearly 250,000 children in England are leaving primary school overweight or obese. LBC weather cloudy with sunny spells for most, rain for northeastern England, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. It's slow on the M25, anti-clockwise from junction 26 at Waltham Cross to 25 at the A10. It's because of an accident where one lane is closed. Very busy on the M23 northbound up to the M25. Now, earlier on, there was an accident and now a car has broken down. So one lane is closed again and it's extremely busy. The Blackwall Tunnel is still closed southbound for these repair works and there are huge delays on all the surrounding routes, especially the A13 and the Aspen Way. In Walthamstow, the High Street remains closed both ways, and on the train, Southern and Thameslink services are running between East Grinstead and Hurst Green. And on the underground, the Piccadilly line remains suspended between Rayners Lane and Uxbridge.
This is LBC.
Hurry! Extra savings in Hillary's best ever Black Friday sale end soon. Until the 2nd of December, get an extra 10% off absolutely everything. That's on top of up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, control your blinds from anywhere with a half-price smart hub when you buy any electric blind. Don't forget, with Hillary's, measuring and fitting is always included. So get window wise and book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. Conditions apply.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
Do you know your state pension age? No. Maybe you're not sure, or you don't know how to check. It's so quick and easy to check online. All you need is your date of birth. Knowing your state pension age helps you think about your future. So check yours today. Search state pension age on gov.uk and simply enter your date of birth. State pension age. It's good to know.
When you buy a BMW approved used electric car, there are no surprises. You'll find the largest range and the widest choice. Naturally, every car has been meticulously checked by qualified BMW technicians. Hardly a plot twist. And they always come with a battery health report and at least 12 months unlimited mileage BMW warranty. Just as you'd expect. BMW approved used electric cars. Nothing new here. Search BMW approved used electric. Obviously.
In her framing shop, Sally's got an eye for precision, plus a computer full of customer orders and precious memories. There are locks on the doors and sensors on the windows. But what's securing it all is BT Cybersecurity, with business antivirus, cloud protection, and security awareness training. It helps stop threats before they strike, keeping sensitive business data safe. Because protecting your business takes more than just toughened glass and a steady hand. Cybersecurity is everyone's business. Search BT Business Cybersecurity.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
20 minutes after 8, we will come back to talking about prostate cancer and how you got encouraged to take your test and obviously how it went for you. But we must, or notwithstanding the importance of that story, there are others we need to make you aware of. And this is one you won't hear or read anywhere else, because LBC has it exclusive that nearly 250,000 children are leaving primary school overweight or obese, with obesity rates among the poorest children nearly twice as high as those of their wealthier classmates. New analysis shows that 44% of that age group from the most deprived sections of society leaving primary school with a BMI above the healthy weight, compared to just 26 whose parents are in the higher earning brackets. Now, this research, based on government data, lays bare the link between poverty and childhood obesity, and is likely to pile further pressure on the Chancellor, days away, of course, from her budget. Enough from me. Let's get to an expert. Sarah Woolnough is from the health charity The King's Fund. They produced the figures. She told LBC,
it's a societal issue. It's systemic. That doesn't mean it's too hard to solve. There are absolutely things that we know we can do. Reducing child poverty, thinking about the school environment, thinking about helping families access cheaper, healthier, nutritious food, as well as taking on some of the interests and the advertising and marketing, the aggressive marketing of certain food and drink to children, are all parts of a kind of comprehensive approach that's needed if we're really serious and the government is serious about creating the healthiest generation of children.
Sarah Woolnough from the King's Fund. Speaking of the conversation, Nicola Ludden-Rain, who's a dietitian and wrote How Not to Eat Ultra-Processed Food. The figures, and I'm sure my colleagues have outlined them to you prior to calling you, how surprised or otherwise are you? Good morning.
Hi, thanks for having me. I think they are really sad, but sadly not surprising. I spent over a decade working in Bradford in some really deprived areas, and you can see why, because calorie for calorie, it is cheaper to eat these high in fat, salt, sugar, ultra-processed food. You only have to take a look around the environment. There's lots of fast food shops. So if you've got a lack of awareness of why, for example, fruits and veg are good for you, then you've got a cost of living crisis. You've got a lack of knowledge of what to do with these healthful foods. You can see why a lot of families rely on these high in fat, calorie convenience foods.
You say that, Nicola, if I may call you that. But if I take you to Sainsbury's or Tesco or Waitrose or whatever, you can get one of those big packets of pasta for £1 whatever. You can get some chicken breasts, possibly. You can make a jolly healthy meal, and it's not going to cost you as much as chicken and chips and a can of Coke or Fanta, is it? Or Pepsi?
You can, and I would add to that, you can go for frozen fruit and veg, which is more nutritious and cheaper and easier to cook with than fresh. However, parents need to know how to cook that at home. And for example, well,
how to boil pasta? No.
I mean, some of my patients didn't have access to fridges or freezers. They would use a lot of deep fat fryers. We used to run cooking lessons. I think Food is, for example, food is a, and health is a priority for me, but it may not be for somebody living in poverty. They might be thinking, well, we haven't got heating this week. So food almost goes off the radar. And that's why healthcare professionals like myself need to work with people in these deprived areas, whether that be cooking lessons or helping access to an air fryer as opposed to a deep fat fryer. And like you said, nudging towards these healthy family meals that can be made in bulk to save families time.
How much is it laziness? I'm sure in some instances, you're right, people are unfortunately really on the breadline and it's heat or eat, I get it. But in some instances, it's just easier for mum and or dad to go to the fried chicken shop, isn't it?
We've all been there. I'm a busy mum of two, and I know what it's like. I know what it's like. You know, being so tired at the end of the day and just wanting to put fish fingers and beans and peas, which actually can be a really healthful meal. So I think in those scenarios, we need to show how actually you can make these quick and healthy meals, because healthy ultra processed foods do exist, and I'm a big believer that we shouldn't tarnish them all with the same brush.
Is a fish finger healthy?
I would say so. Same as baked beans, these plant-based milks, wholemeal bread. So I think a lot of families are very confused. They're being told on one hand they need to eat healthier, and then on the other they shouldn't eat ultra-processed foods. But then what's left? These rather expensive whole foods. So it's about bridging the gap and saying that it's not all ultra-processed foods are created equal.
You've mentioned you're a mum. Might I ask your children's ages? You don't have to tell me, of course.
They've just turned 4 and 7.
Ah. And how are you going to ensure that they don't join this troubling number of being a little bit overweight as they leave primary school? What is their health or eating regime, or both, Nicola?
I think three main things I'd like to share. Like, firstly, making sure that their main drink is water or milk. Definitely fizzy drinks shouldn't feature. Second is role modelling. So having at least one family meal a day, if you can, at the table to role model and let your kids see you eating these vegetables and fruits. And thirdly, activity. Like, get them into a sport or an activity that they enjoy, whether that be through school or at a local leisure centre.
Grateful for your time. Nicola Ludham-Rain, dietitian, author of How Not to Eat Ultra Processed. This is what you're saying about that. David in Bristol. My 14-year-old son can cook and does cook himself simple, healthy chicken, pasta and veg dishes. This is an education issue. Excuse me. Karen says, on obese children, cost of food, people holding down multiple jobs, grabbing food that's cheap and possibly quick. Go back post-war, mostly one person at home, keeping the home and cooking health food from scratch. I'm a reasonable earner, but I cannot afford meat or fish now, except chicken. Well, you can get some fish. I mean, mackerel's not that expensive, is it? Is it? I mean, I know, so if you want to go for tuna, you're going to have to spend a lot of money. Let's go coming back to our conversation about prostate cancer. We have been discussing other subjects. We started by the Prime Minister seeming to subscribe to the view that Andrew Forney, known as the Prince, rather, should go to the US. Gary says, Gary in Kent, I don't think he should go to America to face questions. He may not have actually witnessed anything, and he may not have necessarily what backgrounds the girls came from. He may not have known the girls were being paid, and as far as Andrew's concerned, the sex was consensual, but he just denies any wrongdoing. All right, him on that one. We've also been talking about the West Midlands Police and the fact that it would appear that they made up information so those fans from Tel Aviv could not come. Ronnie in North London, is anyone surprised by this? I smelt a rat when this first started. I can't understand why they would have conned us in this fashion. Your MP is right. This needs a full inquiry. We will feature other stories as well. 8:27. But it is prostate cancer. It is the news that Lord Cameron, he's 59, by the way, his wife saying that he was off for his health MOT, as it's called. And of course, this is for both sexes. Both men and women have MOTs. But she heard a report about the founder of Soho House being diagnosed. Come on, David, make sure you have the test. He did, and he is, I'm delighted to say, recovering. John's in Rochester. John, your point. Good morning.
Morning, Nick.
Hello, sir.
So the point I wanted to make is I was listening to the radio earlier this year.
Yep.
I heard about Chris Hoy and also the Sky News reporter, I think it's Dermot Murnahan, is it?
Dermot Murnahan, yes, unfortunately.
That's it.
Yes.
And they were talking about prostate cancer and early screening and the testing and whatever. I'm a black man. I'm in my 60s. I don't have any symptoms, but I consider myself to be in a high-risk group.
I can assure you are, so you must get checked, yes.
Yes, so I rang, duly rang my surgery and said I'd like a PSA test. And the receptionist flatly refused to allow me to have it done. Said, well, if you haven't got any symptoms, why do you need the test? And I had to argue with her and say, but I'm 60, I'm in a high-risk group. Mm. Isn't prevention better than cure? And it was almost as though she didn't want me to have the test. Eventually, I had it done, and it was all fine.
Good.
I'm within normal sort of categories. But the point I want to make is it should be national screening. You know, I shouldn't have had to ring up and request that test. Every bloke should get it when they hit a certain age, and especially if you're in a high-risk category.
But respectfully, sir, you shouldn't have to fight your way past the receptionist if you're a black fellow in his 60s. The alarm bells should be ringing for that man or woman who took your call. Yes, John, can you get here this afternoon? Boom,
exactly.
That's what should have happened.
That's my point. That's the point I want to make. I don't know why she refused. It took me half an hour before she finally agreed and says, yes, I'll book you in. But I had to practically argue with her and say, I know I don't have any symptoms, but I'm in a high-risk group. You know, why should I have to fight you for this test? You should have said straight away, yes, we'll book you in. So that's the point I want to make.
Lastly, and this is my job to know this, not you, how much do you suppose it would cost per person if we had a national screening programme? And I'll tell you, 18 quid. £18. We could get it down to. If you did enough of it and you got enough bulk behind it, campaigners say, so all that surgery would have cost for you was 18 quid to keep you reassured.
There you go. Rather than someone potentially later on down the road being diagnosed when it's been too far gone, too aggressive and life-limiting.
Credit to you. Just like John. Be like John. If you encounter any resistance, just keep going. You can always say, I'm going to ring Nick Ferrari because he's got a campaign about this, about doctors who, or rather receptionists who won't let patients through. Say whatever you like. Get the test, just like John. Have a good one, John. Thanks for phoning in. We are looking at other stories, but this is, and I'm not surprised, this is dominating our conversation. Well, Sue, I'm going to be talking to you. Actually, let's go a minute late to news. We're going a minute late to news. It is 8:30, because I want Sue in Hendon. We must talk about other things, although it is of huge importance. Obese children. Sue, what's causing it? Is it a bit of laziness? Is it purely cost-driven? What is it? Good morning.
No. Good morning. Actually, I want to talk on behalf of the children. This affected my daughter. Children going from primary school, especially girls, going from primary school into high school, have enough problems going from a small school into a very big school. And girls especially who are just hitting puberty where their bodies are changing. Do you not think the poor kids have enough on their plate, having to deal with all that stress without then suddenly the doctors and everybody else suddenly going, oh, you're obese. It happened to my daughter. Mm-hmm. She is beautiful, but she was literally just going through, you know, she started, you know, she literally was just going through puberty, and her body was changing really dramatically. The last thing that she needed was to somebody, oh, and you're obese. I mean, for goodness sake, they've got enough on their plates. There's enough stress for them. Leave them alone. I don't think it's to do with... I've never cooked a fish finger in my life.
Sue, don't you think if a child is obese, we need to gently work with him or her to try and resolve it?
Yes, that's fair enough. But to tell them, to put added stress on them, they don't need that. She is so body positive and so happy and so comfortable in her skin. And then to go round and say...
But Sue, have you not, like me, you have seen really heavily obese children, not fat like me. I'm talking heavily obese children. You must have seen them.
Yes, I have. And
do you not want to tackle that? Surely.
Yes, 100%. 100%. I just think this is the wrong time. Going from primary to secondary is the wrong time.
Well, when is the right time, Sue?
Stress.
When is the
well,
right
once, well, okay, but once they're in secondary school and the PE and the games are much better and much more... And probably better dealt with, you know...
better regulated. Regulated than
the primary schools. That's the kind of thing...
But lastly, isn't there a danger? Let's use a boy, because if I'm... And I was that fat, but I don't think I was obese, but I'm not going to want to particularly take my shirt off and put shorts on and run around the field if I'm very, very obese. Unless you play rugby like I did. That's the problem, isn't it? You know, you're 13, you're not going to want to take your shirt off in front of all your mates. 10, we can get at it and try and resolve it. just a quick response because we're so late to the news. Sue?
No, I'm sorry. I just, I understand what you're saying. Okay. I just think you're putting too much pressure on the kids.
Totally respect your position, and we are going to agreeably disagree. It's 8:32, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara on LBC. News time, Dominic Ellis.
A leading employers group says the Chancellor must steer clear of inflicting more pain on UK businesses in her budget. The head of the CBI will warn later Rachel Reeves must avoid death by a thousand taxes on Wednesday. Senior US and Ukrainian officials will resume talks later on a plan to end the war with Russia. Both teams have given an upbeat assessment of negotiations following discussions in Geneva over the weekend. An exclusive figure shared with LBC shows 250,000 children in England are leaving primary school overweight or obese. The data shows young people from the most deprived areas are most likely to fall into those categories. LBC weather cloudy with sunny spells for most. Some outbreaks of rain in northeastern England. Mild, a high of 11 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
An inquiry that has run on for God knows how many years, which has cost an ungodly sum of money, some £200 million, and they don't seem to have come to any conclusions that I can see so far that you and I have not come to over the course of the few years since COVID kind of went away. We knew that there was a bit of a toxic and chaotic culture in government during the COVID pandemic. We knew that perhaps that toxic and chaotic culture prevented some good decisions being made. The government didn't really have a plan.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Train to Cambridge and then all aboard the paddleboards. A little bit different, should be fun. Or wobbly, or wet.
The wetsuit's a good look on you, Steve.
Oh, actually, this is very relaxed.
George is up the river cam without a paddle.
Train home, that was such a laugh. I think I might even have a new hobby. Download the Thames Link Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Thames Link Railway, where every stop is a story.
My beans have been to Mexico. They once went to Peru. My beans, they flew to Portugal, then went to Tuvalu. My beans were with me in Italy, then came with me to Greece. I slurped their sauce on Spanish shores. I nibbled them in Nice. My Heinz beans have seen the world. They've travelled far and wide because they are, as we all know, too good to leave behind.
Okay, let me stop you there, sir. You still have to check them into the hold.
Oh, all right then. Honestly.
Beans means Heinz.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helped advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it, and there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
We are going to stay with our conversation about obese children. Juliana, you'll be the next caller on that. Matt says the idea there are people out there that cannot cook a simple meal is deeply disturbing. Pasta with tomato sauce takes 15 minutes. A salad, 10. Chicken, mashed potato, an apple as a dessert. Come on, nobody expecting people to cook elaborate meals. We're talking about simple food. Audrey from Royston. Your lady is right. BMI is not a suitable measure to be used for children. My granddaughter is also going through puberty and has what used to be called a bit of puppy fat. My daughters were the same at her age, and as they grew taller, this naturally sorted itself out. Juliana in Waterford on this. Juliana, what are you going to tell me? Good morning.
Oh, good morning, Nick. Nice to speak to you. I feel passionately about this. I think it's so sad that people are not taught, children are not taught in school how to cook. I mean, I don't think they are.
Are they not?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I helped in a primary school. Mm. I don't see it. I mean, we used to have maybe just a couple of hours once a week, or it could be after school. But they could just be, children are so receptive. If they could just show them diagrams or something of what UPF foods do to their body and why they're so tempting, I just think, really, people don't know how to cook very much these days.
How did you learn to cook?
I learned at school, actually, and I absolutely loved it. I went on to teach it a bit. But I think, I just don't understand why something as basic as that, which is so important to health And their minds benefit too, of course.
Do you have children, Juliana?
I do.
How did they, assuming...
Well, they're all older than me now, Nick, you know, I know,
they're all grown up, as we say. Did they learn to cook from mum or from school? Or
from
a bit of
me,
both?
Yes, from me, yeah.
So if we have a generational thing, this is just going to get worse, isn't it, Juliana?
It is going to get worse, but it's so basic, Nick, and I think people feel embarrassed that they can't cook, and just pasta is not enough. They need to know a bit more.
They do. Fresh chicken, fruit, and others. Juliana, thank you for your input. We'll return to that story, but to other matters. And you don't need reminding that there is a budget just around the corner. So what about an area with could be savings made over the region of £154 million? All right, okay, I know. In the terms of running the country, that's not even a round of drinks. It's virtually a cup of coffee. But it's still an eye-watering sum. That's the bill to you and me for a benefit scheme that in part helps fund smart watches and wobble boards to help people stay in work, and it's risen by more than a fifth in 12 months. It's the government-funded Access to Work scheme. You can get nearly £70,000 a year per head for equipment and support, including sunlight alarm clocks, work coaches, noise-cancelling headphones and Apple smartwatches. The total jumped to £321 million, but it means spending on this particular scheme has risen to £154 million, one of which is the ADHD sickfluencers as in influencers, sickfluencers on social media. Now, Fraser Nelson is broadcaster and journalist. He's columnist for The Times. He also, of course, made a Channel 4 show, Britain's Benefits Scandal, earlier this year. Joins me now. Is this the sort of, single quotes, abuse that your programme displayed and discovered? Good morning, Fraser.
Good morning. I'm not sure it's called abuse. If the government's going to give these things away free, we don't ought to be surprised that people are going to claim them. And there are so many other forms of this. There's the motability scheme. There's other ways of basically playing a very complicated benefit system to your advantage. So I always blame the architects of the system rather than the users of it. But the wider point is that when Rachel Reid is looking for money in her budget, there is a lot of money right now being basically the cost of social failure. What should be spent making work pay is instead luring people down a very complicated, but still in some cases quite rewarding, path of benefits. And if benefits pay more than work, we shouldn't be so surprised that people would choose benefits if given the choice.
Fraser, you reference the architect. Presumably there have been successive architects, as in the previous Conservative administration and the one before that and the current Labour administration. Fraser.
Yes, and on it goes until the guys in charge quite often don't even recognise the system. See, this is crucial. When I've been looking into welfare, so often I come across the fact that the people at the top, whether it's the civil servants or even the ministers, don't actually recognise what's going wrong. Like, they can be shocked. You can get a minister who can say, look at this, look at how many motability schemes, how many cars are being issued for people with alcohol problems. How can this be the case? So in a way, they're almost as shocked as the rest of us when they find out the results of this. But it is so huge, so Byzantine, that the architects, or those who inherit the system, it takes them a while to work out the defects of what was going wrong last time. And by the time they get their head around it, there's a change of staff, and on it goes again. And so this sort of crazy dance continues.
You talk about crazy dance. Applications for Access to Work can be filled out in as little as 20 minutes, and in many instances, no medical diagnosis needs to accompany the application. This seems extraordinary. This is literally just saying, can I have some money or can I have a wobble board? Yes, you can. It's in the post.
Oh, yes. On a more fundamental basis, if you want to apply for sickness benefit, the success rate is close to 80% at the moment. And again, you can do that in sort of the space of a one-hour phone call, and you can be coached through that by all sorts of people online. So that's the funny thing. You mentioned the sick fluencers earlier on. We're now in an era where you can get online advice. People compare notes on social media. You can get quite good advice on how to navigate this system. And the problem, of course, that means you need to change the system. And that's what I rather hope the government's going to do, but it's certainly taking its time.
3 or 4 days' time when we are looking back on the budget. As regards the whole aspect of welfare, I remind everybody your documentary, The Dispatches, was Britain's Benefits Scandal. Where are we going to be post-budget on welfare payments, Fraser?
Well, we're going to be heading towards £100 billion a year for welfare payments. There's no meaningful reform at all, as far as I can see. Nothing to change your trajectory. And the worst thing about it is that at the last count, every single day, 5,000 people were being signed up to long-term sickness benefits. Now, if you imagine, that's like an O2 stadium in the sort of in the space of a week. That's what we're losing from the economy. That's what we're... And until they can stop that process, it's getting a lot worse and a lot more expensive.
Fraser Nelson, columnist for The Times, broadcaster and documentary maker, Britain's benefit scandal for dispatchers on Channel 4 earlier this year, 8:43. Thanks, Fraser. You might want to talk about that. If, by the way, you are hoping to hear more about prostate cancer, can I tell you, and I think it's justified, although I do have an interest in this, as I've told you many times, for the purpose of absolute clarity, that ISO serves as an ambassador. We are going to return to that later in the show, but we're talking about obesity in light of the figures that you've heard exclusively here on LBC, the high number of children leaving primary school who are obese or verging on obese in weight levels. Peter's in Windsor. Peter, what can you tell me? Good morning.
Oh, hi, Nick. Yeah, I was so incensed a little bit early on listening to the conversation around this that I just had to phone in. And ironically, the only place I could pull over was next to the Golden Arches. But effectively, the...
Which tells us everything we need to know about Britain at the moment. Yeah, go on.
we've got sort of skin in this game, really, in as much as my eldest, who's 5 years old, William, he joined primary school last year, and at some point in those early months was measured. And effectively, he came back as obese, overweight. But if I showed you a picture of him, he's skinny. You can see his ribs.
No.
He's so skinny. It's unbelievable. And a
sorry,
lot
they're
parents,
4 and 5, did you say the boys are?
Yeah, so William's 5. He was measured, and he came back as overweight. And
you can see his ribs if he takes his shirt off.
You can see his ribs. Honestly, that is no skin. There's nothing on him. And then, so the issue is, like, my wife, she cooks healthy meals all the time, insists on it. We don't go to places like the Golden Arches. They have lots of fruit. They don't eat chocolate. They don't have any fizzy drinks. Everything's always healthy. She insists on it. She's rigid with it. And you've got William, who is so skinny you can see his ribs, and Louis, who's 4, who's like a little bowling ball. And we can't figure out for the life of us why he does enjoy his food compared to William. He does, he's self-control. So really, it must be a proportion, not necessarily the food that we're feeding them effectively.
How concerned are you, and I assume it's your wife or your girlfriend, whatever, that this needs to be... You need to keep an eye as they sort of reach the age of 10, 11.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm freaking out because of William being classed as overweight when he went, and the difference between the two is quite stark. So I don't want Louis to suffer with his weight, through primary school. And, yeah, we need to tackle it. But to be told that it's potentially because we're taking them to junk food places or, we're not cooking them healthy meals... It's just not as simple as that. They literally eat identical meals, and they're the polar opposites. Now, clearly, there's some sort of Louis just loves his food and eats every morsel, or he there's some sort of genetic lower down issue, hormones, whatever it is, that's making him grow.
Personal question to finish with, if I may: were you a slim Jim at school, or did you have a few issues with your weight?
No, I've always kind of struggled to keep it under control. And I've been in the armed forces for 30 years.
Oh,
it's been
you?
A constant battle despite all of the exercise and fitness that we've done.
Right.
And actually, I've had cancer of late, and it's blown that completely out of the water. But, it is an issue for me. Not for Kate. She's completely different. She's much more healthy than I am.
Yeah.
And so, we've...
You still in the military now, Peter?
I'm just about coming to the end of it, I think.
What are you going to do?
Well, that is the big question for me.
You've got little ones to look after, buddy. You've got years before the mast. You can't give up yet.
No. Literally, the time is up. I've been 3 decades in, so
You enjoyed it?
Yes, kind of. Some of it, yeah, definitely.
Are you a soldier, a sailor, an airman? What are you?
In the army. Charged with looking after the finance, and it's been an interesting tour.
All right. Hey, thanks for your service. Look after the kids. I sense you will because you're so invested. Best wishes to your wife as well. More calls to come on that. Although, coming up after the news, there's been no shortage of negative headlines for this news business.
We're going to walk down to the Capitol, and I'll be there with you, and we fight. We fight like hell.
The appalling way that Panorama presented that part of Donald Trump's speech back on the January the 6th. One of the many mistakes the Beeb has made in recent months. Its chairman is in front of a panel of MPs this afternoon. My colleague Natasha Clark will chronologically look forward to that. 8:47 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
The Chancellor is set to receive a warning from a leading business group later to change course and avoid inflicting more pressure on UK firms in the budget. The White House says talks with Ukraine have made meaningful progress in efforts to end the war with Russia. And charities are praising the former Prime Minister David Cameron for going public with his prostate cancer diagnosis. LBC weather cloudy with sunny spells for most, rain in the northeast, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays on the Surrey stretch of the M25 clockwise at Junction 10 at the A3. It's because of an accident. There are delays of about 4 miles on the approach. Also very busy on the M23 northbound to the M25 junction, and that was after that cart broke down earlier. Severe delays continue on the M11 southbound heading down towards Junction 8 at Bishop Stortford. There's been an accident and one lane is closed. In East London, there are huge delays with the Blackwall Tunnel being closed southbound for these emergency repair works. There are delays on the A13, the Aspen Way, and also long delays on the A12. And on the trains, Elizabeth Line services aren't running between Whitechapel and Stratford.
This is LBC.
When you buy a BMW approved used electric car, there are no surprises. You'll find the largest range and the widest choice. Naturally, every car has been meticulously checked by qualified BMW technicians. Hardly a plot twist. And they always come with a battery health report and at least 12 months unlimited mileage BMW warranty. Just as you'd expect. BMW approved used electric cars. Nothing new here. Search BMW approved used electric. Obviously.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
For GCSE and A-level success, one name stands out. Justin Craig. Small, tailored group tuition that really works. Justin Craig courses consolidate knowledge, boost confidence and improve technique for mocks, assessments and exams. Available in classrooms and online. One-to-one also available. With over 40 years' experience, Justin Craig has helped more than 100,000 students. For more details, visit justincraig.ac.uk. Justin Craig. Tailored for you.
They did it again. Flour instead of flowers. On my birthday. I'm 95 minutes late. But it's hard to leave when you've shared so much. Your postcode, your gluten intolerance. Then I saw it. 25% off your first Ocado shop. Plus free delivery. And I just knew I'd found the online supermarket of my dreams. Ocado. Life delivered. Geographical restrictions. Min spend £60. Max saving £20. Charges and Christmas restrictions apply. New customers only. Terms at Ocado.com.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helped advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it. And there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
In her framing shop, Sally's got an eye for precision, plus a computer full of customer orders and precious memories. There are locks on the doors and sensors on the windows. But what's securing it all is BT Cybersecurity, with business antivirus, cloud protection, and security awareness training. It helps stop threats before they strike, keeping sensitive business data safe. Because protecting your business takes more than just toughened glass and a steady hand. Cybersecurity is everyone's business. Search BT Business Cybersecurity.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
9 minutes before nine. So where do you start with this slew of stories the BBC has made headlines for all the wrong reasons? Bob Villain at Glastonbury, Hugh Edwards, the disgraced newsreader who still hasn't handed back about £200,000, that Panorama edit, reportedly one unit within the newsroom, the LGBT plus unit, who decides on certain stories doesn't really fit with our agenda. Someone's got some questions to answer, and it's the BBC chairman later this afternoon here with all the details, LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark. Natasha, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, it feels like it's going... moment for the BBC chairman Samir Shah. Of course, he has been at the helm and been helping to steer the ship, as you say, through several of the BBC's crises of late. And of course, the latest, the final straw, which really broke the camel's back, the editing of that Panorama documentary found to have been clipped inappropriately, giving the impression that Donald Trump had explicitly called for violence on those Capitol riots. Here was Deborah Furness, one of those who left the BBC a couple of weeks ago. Here's what she said as she left, denying, however, that there is institutional bias at the heart of the BBC.
I stepped down over the weekend because the buck stops with me. But I'd like to make one thing very clear. BBC News is not institutionally biased. That's why it's the world's most trusted news provider. Our journalists are hard-working people who strive for impartiality, and I will stand by their journalism.
That was Deborah Furness speaking as she left the BBC a couple of weeks ago after she and Tim Davey, the head of the BBC, quit over the handling of this. And this has, of course, led to Donald Trump himself to sue the BBC for damages of up to $5 billion. The BBC, however, has said there is not a case to answer. But, Nick, it's a hugely problematic time for the corporation, not least because of all the other issues that you mentioned that it's still dealing with, the fallout of Glastonbury, MasterChef, issues over Gaza, and Israel. You remember that when they used the son of a Hamas official as part of their documentary. So today, MPs on the Culture Committee are going to get their chance to grill the BBC chairman, Samir Shah. He's now the man who is left in charge after those departures of Tim Davey and Deborah Furness. Here, there are some wondering why, of course, he is still the chairman when he has overseen all of the same mess as the rest of them. He is facing even more pressure after the BBC board member, Shamit Banerjee, resigned on Friday. He cited governance issues at the corporation, and behind the scenes, he's said to have been unhappy about Shah not challenging board members about their claims that the BBC held liberal left-wing bias and groupthink. Now, Shah has long been a bit of a target for people in those MPs and the Culture Committee. The Tory Dame Caroline Downer, she's the chair of the committee. She has in the past expressed serious reservations about Shah's leadership. One staffer has said they expect this session today to be extremely lively. The committee is also going to hear today from the report's author, Michael Prescott. He's a former Sunday Times journalist. You'll remember it was him that was, of course, behind that leaked memo discussing some of the details of that Panorama docu and exactly how it was edited. Sir Robbie Gibb as well, the board member who was appointed by Boris Johnson. He's been accused of mounting a coup on the BBC's leadership. We know there's been a row behind the scenes, Nick, over that documentary between the board, whether they should apologise. I spoke to the Culture Secretary, Lisa Nandy, last week about whether she felt the problems were being properly addressed.
I've been working really closely with the BBC leadership, not just over the last week, but over several weeks since the leaked emails that made allegations about the Panorama documentary and others. I think it's fair to say that in those discussions, there had been discussions with government about the various positions of different senior executives in the BBC. But of course, those questions are questions for the board and not for the government.
So is Samir Shah doing enough to keep confidence in the board, in Lisa Nandy and the public? There's also questions about why he didn't take action on the documentary sooner. We know it's been sat internally for months. Shah has said that he and the BBC board remain committed to doing everything we can to ensure a smooth transition as we appoint a new director general and strive to move forward to serve all of our audiences and secure the BBC's future. I think it's going to get spicy today, Nick. We'll be watching from half past three today.
Takes place this afternoon. It's 4 minutes before nine. Let's come back to our conversation about obesity, particularly within our children. Miranda's in Aldershot. Miranda, what do you have to say to this story? Good morning.
Oh, good morning. Well, I've got two teenagers. Well, one is 13, one's 14. And my son has just shown an interest in joining my gym, so I've signed him up to my gym.
Right.
But he suffers from terrible acne, so he really doesn't want to take his shirt off. He's got, like you were saying about being self-conscious.
Yeah, of course, sure. Yeah.
But he is now showing an interest in going to the gym, and he's also showing an interest in cooking. So I'm doing like 5-minute bite size because he's never shown an interest before in how to fry an egg, how to scramble an egg, how to do, beans on toast. So I'm doing little bite size chunks for him.
Yep.
And
what about boiling pasta? Have you done that yet, boiling pasta?
No, I mean, I taught myself how to cook from HelloFresh, but I never knew how to cook, so I got the home delivery service and the recipes and the food delivered.
HelloFresh is what they send food baskets, do they? Is that how that works?
Yeah, during lockdown, I taught myself how to cook. Yeah. I never knew how to cook before then, but now I love cooking. Okay. So,
just coming back to what you said about the chap, you're seeing a doctor about the acne. You've got some medication for the boy, have you?
Yeah, we're trying various different, multiple different ways of treating it, because it's a horrible thing to suffer from.
Poor lad. Yeah. You're so self-conscious at that age, whether you've got, I don't know, acne, or you're currying some puppy fat, or whether you've got, I don't know, sticky out ears, whatever it might be. Wish the lads well, Miranda, thank you. Lovely that they'll come along to the gym with Mum. Anne in Haywards Heath. Anne, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning to you, Nick. I try and be quick. I know time's always against us. I wasn't fed as a child. My foster mother couldn't cook. Thing I did when I got married.
What did you eat?
Library.
Hold on one second. What did you eat? Just bread and butter or something? What did they give you?
No, I would go to school hungry. I'd come home and there'd be nothing cooked and school meals weren't paid for. I actually survived, but I did learn.
What did you eat? Forage mushrooms and take apples off the tree?
No, there wasn't very much. Honestly, Nick, obviously it was real poverty and there wasn't food and she couldn't cope. I think she was mentally ill.
Right.
And I just survived. That's all I can say. When I went to a house where there was porridge, I was amazed how easy it was. I taught my children from the age of 3 to cook.
Yeah.
I really did. My son is a food scientist. I set up sessions for lone parents, cookery lessons, everything, because I know what poverty really is like, and giving people these school meals with foods that would be the cheapest and not the healthiest, or the free breakfast, I'm amazed about.
And the figures are truly shocking. The music means we have to move on. Best wishes to your family. Thank you. And how you came out of that at poverty and food poverty, certainly. We move on by actually back to the future, because we come to the biggest story of the day. Lord Cameron reveals he's had and is recovering from prostate cancer. Professor Hashim Ahmed, Chief Inspector of the Transform Trial, telling me just on Friday,
we're going to do everything possible to try and keep the benefit, reduce the harms, and really move this question on so that we can deliver a screening program that benefits men in the future.
Plus another story concerning our children, and is there anything, you're fought enough to be a parent, is there anything more important in your life? But again, how school starters, so we go even younger now, can't speak but can swipe? How are we failing them? News is next on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, influential business leaders are set to warn the Chancellor to change course and avoid further tax rises in the budget. The head of the CBI is expected to use a speech later to say firms risk getting locked in a stop-start economy if they're targeted again. Ministers have today confirmed plans to cut energy bills for some of the UK's most intensive business by 25% from next year. Speaking to Nick, Business Secretary Peter Kyle defended the decision in the face of domestic bill rises next year.
We need to make sure that those businesses are more efficient and effective so that they can take more advantage of those great trade deals that we've struck and the export markets out there, and also lower the cost of things like cars and other services for people as well. So this isn't just about putting money into business. Business therefore provides products and services to people.
The Prime Minister has told LBC that Wednesday's budget will include tough but right decisions to protect families and the economy. Sir Keir Starmer says the freeze on some rail fares in England announced yesterday is just the start to making life easier for those who are struggling. You can read more on the LBC app. The White House says talks with Ukraine have made meaningful progress in efforts to end the war with Russia. American and Ukrainian officials say they've identified clear next steps following discussions over the weekend. Talks are due to resume in Switzerland today. It's been revealed nearly 250,000 children in England are leaving primary school either overweight or obese.
Exclusive figures shared with LBC also show those deprived areas are most likely to fall into those categories. Dietitian Nicola Ludlam-Rain says advice around healthy foods has become too confusing and needs urgent revision.
They've been told on one hand they need to eat healthier, and then on the other they shouldn't eat ultra-processed foods, but then what's left is rather expensive whole foods. So it's about bridging the gap and saying that it's not all ultra-processed foods are created equal.
The government says it is restricting junk food adverts and is stopping fast food shops opening close to schools. Some of the key figures involved in the row over the BBC's recent editorial standards are due before MPs. The corporation's chairman will appear alongside board members at the Commons Culture Committee later. And charities are praising David Cameron for going public with his prostate cancer diagnosis. The former Prime Minister has revealed he was successfully treated for the disease earlier this year. Lord Cameron said he wants to add weight to calls for screening to be offered to men at higher risk. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 46 at 95.87. The pound buys $1.30 and €1.13. LBC weather, cloudy with sunny spells for most. Some outbreaks of rain for the northeast of England. Mild, a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Let's hear from the Chancellor, Geoffrey.
From the Chancellor, Nigel. Chancellor John.
Norman.
Kenneth.
Gordon.
Alistair.
George.
Philip.
Sajid.
Rishi.
Nadine.
Kwasi.
Jeremy.
And now, Rachel. Another year, another budget. Over the past 40 years, we've seen it all. Our experts will continue to filter through the noise and uncertainty, helping you make the most of your tax allowances. Hargreaves Lansdown, helping Britain invest through it all. Capital at risk. Tax rules apply and can change.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 3 minutes after nine on Monday, November the 24th. My routine health check discovered I have prostate cancer. I'm recovered or recovering, so says former Prime Minister David, now Lord Cameron, as he backs this national screening programme, which campaign groups could come in for. £18 a bloke, £18 per test? Why the resistance? We'll take your stories. Remember, I told you before, Lord Cameron was encouraged to do it. I would never use the word bullied. Encouraged to do it by his missus. Who or how were you encouraged to take the test? In other news, children are arriving at primary school, so we go younger than the group we were just starting with. Incapable of speaking properly, but able to swipe their screens on devices. How are they failing, that group of children? Mike Baxter, head teacher of school in central London. He says phones are causing some of these major issues among children.
When we have to deal with young people and issues with mobile phones, invariably it's what's happening outside of school. And that's why I'd really encourage all people involved in this to think again about how we can use mobile phones outside of school.
Plus, can I introduce you to a new fashion label? It's called I Wool Survive, as wool from gay sheep makes its debut appearance at a New York fashion show. But the designer will only work with wool from sheep that are sheep, that, or sheep that is or are gay. So how can you tell if your sheep is gay?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Front page news, if you were listening at the start of the show, for many of the newspapers, in fact all of the newspapers, bar those that decided to go with, I would suggest, pointless budget speculation, because we've had mansion taxes that are on and that are not on and all sorts of other things. You've only got to, I can get the speculation on the morning of, but, or maybe I was just, if, like, did you look at the Sunday papers this morning? This morning? Yesterday morning even? This weekend and think, oh God, you don't know. In one instance, I won't name the title, in one instance, it was the polar opposite of what it had said earlier this month would happen. I showed it to my wife, still sounds odd. I showed her, have you seen this? She said, why are you showing me that? I said, it was totally different to 2 weeks ago. She said, I don't know. Well, it is. You've got to pay attention. Anyway, let's talk about the story that is front page, which is the initially troubling news, but let's put the positive on it, in that David, now Lord Cameron, 59, by the way, discovered that he had prostate cancer in a routine medical, having been suggested he should have the PSA test by his wife. For his wife, Samantha, Lady Cameron had heard Nick Jones, the founder of Soho House, talking about it on a radio show. Sadly, not this one. But goodness knows we do as much as we can on this. And so he had a test. Now, this came out, of course, it was just on Friday that the Transform trial was launched. Now, if you're in the field of prostate cancer, and again, for the purpose of due diligence, I can tell you again that I am an ambassador for it. I was speaking on Friday, the Transform trial was launched. Professor Hashim Ahmed, he's running the trial. And he told me, this was just on Friday, why screening could be so valuable in combating the cancer in men.
We've seen over the last few months, the debate has been raging. Part of society has been pushing for screening for prostate cancer. Others have been warning that it's not quite as simple as that. And we need evidence, we need data, and Transform will fill that evidence gap. Because we're not sure whether it's the right thing to start a population health intervention like prostate cancer screening. The reason for that is we know screening for prostate cancer saves lives, but it can come at a cost of the diagnostic tests can be harmful and the treatments themselves can sometimes be worse than the disease. So we need to, in Transform, look at new ways of screening for prostate cancer that might involve a PSA test at various levels. It might involve a spit test, which looks at genetic risk, and importantly, a 10-minute MRI scan, what I call a prostagram, to see if we can address those harms, reduce them as low as possible. We can't eliminate them, but reduce them as low as possible and retain the benefit of screening for prostate cancer, saving lives. I think this trial could show that we could save even more lives because currently we know that the PSA test can actually miss important cancers as well, which we often don't talk about.
So, as we heard, this is the former Prime Minister. Now, one senior politician who was on the rounds today, currently in government, is Business and Trade Secretary Peter Kyle. He joined me in the first hour of the show. And I talked to him about this story. Mr. Kyle commended Lord Cameron for coming forward and encouraged others to do so.
Well, firstly, let me just pay tribute to David. Apparently, he has made a full recovery, and yep. I'm grateful and I'm pleased for it. I have had a test in the
Good.
Past. I have, and I take very seriously the need for preventative care, even though it does mean you have to take time out of your day from time to time, and it feels, when you feel healthy,
yes.
I know it's hard to prioritise it, but I urge people to prioritise it.
All right. So what is it that you made you had the test? Rupert in Halstead. Rupert, what was it for you? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I think for me, it was actually a friend of mine. So I'm 53 and a friend of mine exactly the same age. I came around to my house and announced to me that actually he'd had not only prostate cancer, but had it removed. We do a similar job. We have a similar lifestyle. And when that happens, psychologically, they're going, my goodness, well, that could be me. And sort of being in your early 50s, etc., mm-hmm. it sort of psychologically isn't quite on your radar screen. So that's what encouraged me to go. Now, his was picked up in a work, I think, private health, privately done through his work. So something that he probably has done every couple of years. Whereas I was out of work at the time, so I went down to my local surgery. And like your caller, John, I didn't quite have the same issue of having to argue, but I would say a little bit of resistance.
Just to remind those who were, John was a man who chose to tell us that he was black and he was down in Kent and he had a real battle to get his test. Rupert, on you go.
Yeah, so it's a little bit of a questioning. So, well, you know, why would you want this, et cetera? So, well, I explained to, you know, a friend of my age has had it and I'd like to have this done. So I did go and have the test, but my frustration is I was told, oh, well, tell you if there's something wrong. And I never heard anything back. And I've actually had this with, I've had to have a diabetes test as well recently
mm-hmm.
because of the sort of thing that can be picked up at the optician. And again, nothing comes back. So I have no idea what my PSA level is at all. I have no information.
Well, didn't they tell you at the end?
No, nothing at all. So I don't know what my levels are. And if I were to go for it again, I'd be there thinking, well, you know, what is it? And I'd be interested to know if others have this experience with the NHS, which is they won't tell you if you're all right. They'll only tell you if there's something wrong with you. And
I wonder why they don't tell you you're 2.4 or whatever. I just made a number up there, by the way.
I just wonder if it's bureaucracy in the sense of, like, that means somebody has to phone you up and it's a process. So if you are all right, they're not going to do that. But you see, the knock-on effect for me is, well, I feel I'll have to have another one, whereas if my PSA level was so, you know, low, et cetera, it would be, and I'd be advised, well, you know, really don't have to worry about this, come back in, you know, 5 years or whatever. But it makes you think, well, I've got to go and have another one now, which is more cost and more bureaucracy to find out the information that I probably should have been given in the first place.
How strange. Lastly, what are your plans, Rupert? You think you'll go back in a year?
I think I would. I don't have any symptoms, etc., or anything like that. But having said that, my friend who had his out didn't either. Mm. But I have no history. I'm not in that sort of... bracket of concern. But the other quick point I wanted to make was about this
briefly, if you would, because I have others to get to, but go ahead. Yep.
Well, this point about £18 was like, if that's the issue, let me pay.
Yeah.
I've got the ability to do it. I'm very happy to hand over £20, keep the change for the NHS, I don't mind.
Yeah.
But there's never any facility for that, with lots of sort of things. I know that opens up another debate about NHS funding, but if that's the barrier, I can, and I'm happy to.
And so would I be. I think the reason it's so, quotes, relatively cheap, close quotes, is because of the sheer bulk. Because you're doing, effectively, every man in Britain over the age of, I would guess, 50, and possibly for non-whites, for black men, vulnerable men, a little bit under. So that's the bulk of it. I would think if it was more selective, it's not going to be £20, that's or 18. Rupert, thank you for your call on that. You see, what's the problem there with Rupert and with John, the caller in the previous hour? As the former Prime Minister says, quotes, men are not very good at talking about their health. We tend to put things off. We're embarrassed to talk about something like the prostate because it's so intricately connected with sexual health and everything else. I sort of thought, well, this has happened to you and you should lend your voice to it. So there we are. We had John in the first hour. We've got Rupert here, who actually make a point of either trying to get a test or Rupert, can I get my actual number? No, we're not going to tell you that, but you're okay. Which is going to add to the doubt, isn't it? Alan's in Northampton. Alan, your story. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Nice to speak to you.
Good to have you on.
I find it amazing that people are being told that they shouldn't have a PSA test if they have no symptoms, and that's exactly what the test is for, because you have no symptoms.
Mm.
A friend of mine started getting symptoms, and by then it was too late. I've known him 40 years, and we lost him in April due to prostate cancer.
Sorry.
But as for my story, I was invited by our excellent GP surgery to have a health check, and my wife came with me. She said so that I wouldn't forget anything, but I think it's because I might misbehave. And
in what way misbehave? What might you do? Go down the pub instead.
I just get a bit cheeky.
Oh, right. Okay, right.
But anyway, so there was no problem at all. She said, can you have a PSA test while he's here? They said, yes, no problem. And then the results came through very shortly afterwards, and it turned out it was positive, and I should go for further checks at Northampton Hospital. And I had many scans, and culminating in a biopsy, which wasn't as bad as I thought, but slightly embarrassing because it was all ladies doing it, and you're lying there in the birthing position with a lady down the business end.
Right.
And she told me it's no good screaming because the walls are soundproofed. But it was.
And what was the ultimate test? Alan, are you all right?
Well, they said I had an aggressive cancer, but it hadn't spread anywhere, and this was found by all the other scans. So I then was given, I was put on hormone therapy, female hormones, which reduces the testosterone that feeds the cancer, which is okay, but there's one side effect. I'm getting terrible hot flushes.
Seriously?
Oh, yes, they said...
Okay.
They said, welcome to the female menopause, but fortunately I haven't started taking any interest in handbags yet, so...
All right. Alan, thank you. You be well. Keep that humour going. Thank you for that. Rupert, if you're still listening, so many people are saying, Stephen in Bexhill, Kim, Tony, you can get all your test results on your NHS app. Your PSA results will be there. I was not aware of that. And thank you, all of you listening. Still more coming in. Janet Van Wingard, thank you for that. Gary and Carl Shulton, Roger as well. Would it hurt just to tell the patient at the time? Do you think it's a bit odd? And sorry, so what is my... So I'm great, not a problem. What is my score? Oh, do you'd like to go to the app? Well, can you not just tell me it's 2.4? No, go to the app. And thank you, all of you. But why should you have to go to your app? Why can't you just tell you at the time? It's 9:16, LBC News Headlines. Dominic Ellis.
A leading employers group says the Chancellor must change course and avoid inflicting more pressure on UK businesses in Wednesday's budget. Senior US and Ukrainian officials will resume talks later on a plan to end the war with Russia. And the former Prime Minister Lord Cameron has revealed he's been successfully treated for prostate cancer. LBC weather, cloudy with sunny spells for most, outbreaks of rain in northeastern England, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays on the Surrey stretch of the M25. It's slow for at least half an hour clockwise to junction 10 at the A3. It's following an accident where one lane is closed. The Blackwall Tunnel remains closed southbound for the repair work, so as a result, there are lengthy delays on all the surrounding routes. Also very busy in Chessington on the Leatherhead Road, both ways heading towards the Maldon Rushick crossroads, and that's because of the temporary light. And in Coulsdon North, there are delays on Woodcote Grove Road going both ways, and that's because of an accident at the Vale. On the train, Southern Art running between Redhill and Tunbridge, and the Elizabeth line is suspended between Whitechapel and Stratford, and then severe delays on the rest of the line.
This is LBC.
At Lidl, Black Friday means big brands and little prices. There's bargains on brands like KitchenAid, Ninja, Sharp TVs, Black & Decker, Silent Night, Tefal, Tony's and plenty more. Hurry! Available while stocks last from the 23rd of November. Lidl, more to value.
Limited offer subject to availability. Selected stores, GB only.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
Train to Brighton with the besties. Immaculate vibes, as always. But I bet my ice skating is going to be pure chaos.
Oh, Em, you better hold my hand. Oh, I'm going up.
No, styled it out. I've got this.
Last one to the other side buys the hot chocolate.
Back on the train. Only fell twice.
Low-key legend.
We have to do this every year.
Download the Southern Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel and off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story.
Chase is the digital bank you can count on.
How so?
Because you get 1% cash back on your grocery shop.
Like on prosciutto?
Yeah, prosciutto.
And seaweed crackers?
Sure, those two.
Oh, hang on, what about rotisserie chickens?
If it's in your grocery shop, Chase has got your cash back. Join today and get 1% cash back on debit card spending on groceries, fuel and everyday transport. Chase, see what your money can do. 18 plus UK residents eligibility applies. 1% cash back for your first year. Maximum £15 per month. Exceptions apply.
At this time of year, we know you're snowed under. But with Halfords' biggest ever Black Friday sale, you handle the shopping, we'll handle the saving. Grab up to 50% off our motoring and cycling must-haves, including tools, in-car tech, bikes and more. Whether it's Christmas gifts, everyday essentials, or just an excuse to treat yourself, we've got you covered. Pop to your local Halfords today or shop online. Offer subject to availability, full T's and C's and exclusions apply. See Halfords.com for details.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Come back to our conversation. It has dominated so much we've talked about. There are other stories we need to discuss. And the previous hour, we were talking about primary school aged children. Now we go to pre-primary, effectively as they arrive at primary school. Children arriving at primary school incapable of speaking properly, but able to swipe screens on devices, with older pupils self-diagnosing ADHD because of exposure to online content. Let's stay with the little ones arriving at school, primary school, for the first time. Head teacher saying that primary schools need to help tackle conspiracy theories because pupils and their parents are getting nearly all their news from social media. And teachers in focus groups told the PAIRS Commission into countering online conspiracies in schools. The online world was influencing the well-being and behaviour, beliefs and identities of pupils. But let's go with the really little ones. Now, in the previous hour, we shared with you some pretty stark figures that around 250,000 children in the age 10-11 bracket are obese or verging on obesity. Now we learn that some children arrive in primary school incapable of, I quote, speaking properly, but totally up to speed on swiping devices, screens on devices. Now, how on earth has that happened? Well, as you heard, one head teacher has already said he thinks that children, even at that age, are reliant perhaps too much on mobile phones. Be honest. Have you sat down at a restaurant, possibly around your kitchen table, and just to get a bit of peace and quiet, pushed your laptop or something towards a child? Have you not engaged in as much conversation with him or her as perhaps you should? It will come as no surprise to you, I imagine, when you think of the job that I do and I've done for more than 20 years, and I was fortunate to grow up in a house where conversation was all the time. I was the youngest of three brothers, so if I said anything, it had to be fairly swift, mildly amusing, and then shut up. Otherwise, you just had the you-know-what ripped out of you by your bigger brothers. And then I had my dad, who was a newspaper man. He used to tell stories, that literally stories, that he had been covering. My mum trained as a journalist as well, so she could run what's called a press agency or news agency, whatever you want to call it. So talk non-stop round the table. Non-stop! I remember the first girlfriend I ever took home, she said, it never stops round your table, does it? And I said, well, of course, I don't know any different. I've grown up with it. I don't know. But then when I come to think about it, it was. So come on, be honest. Do you hand your child, possibly your mobile phone? Just play with that. Play with this game, darling. Play with that. Or an iPad or something. Well, Rory Keflin-Jones is a technology journalist, author of Always On, Hope and Fear in the Social Smartphone Era. And Mr. Keflin-Jones, I'm putting you up before the beak because I think it's folk like you like you and others who have, in a way, brought this about. How do you plead, Rory? Good morning, sir.
I plead guilty, Nick. I think we're all guilty of that. But my kids are grown up now, and I've got grandkids.
Right.
And my kids grew up as this world was forming. And yes, I think the trouble is the behaviour shown by parents is not in line with what they may claim to say to their kids. And I plead guilty to that. I plead guilty to surfing social media at the table during mealtimes and providing a very bad example. I think we've got to be a bit cautious with this report, because we're hearing the extremes. There are always extremes. There have always been kids arriving at primary school who couldn't speak.
Yeah.
The difference is that they appear to have a different skill, swiping screens, and we've got to be careful about making the link between the two. But it's certainly it is a challenge, and I think the great challenge is what we do about teaching how to navigate this world.
Teaching because parents or teaching teachers or teaching children?
Both. Teaching both. Oh, I think the thing with the kids, that their parents now are of that generation that often that has grown up with these devices.
Yep.
So they see that they've fallen into the traps. And there is some hope that the next generation will actually be savvier than their parents. I've found that I give talks in secondary schools, actually, about how to spot misinformation. And the kids there are reasonably savvy. I mean, they're beginning
to
get...
You couldn't give those talks to the BBC, could you? Sorry, do go on, Rory. I'm only kidding. Little joke between
That's
the two of us.
Low blow, yeah. Low blow.
Go on, Rory.
Yeah. I mean, it is a difficult world because information online all looks the same. We grew up in a time when, you know, when you went to the newsstand and saw the Sunday Sport World War II bomber found on moon next to the Times, you knew that it was a joke. On a Facebook page, everything looks the same, whether it's World War II bomber found on moon or, you know, some boring story about inflation. And kids need to learn how to differentiate between the two. Whether that can start in primary school, I suppose it has to. But
let's finish on a positive. So you genuinely have, Rory, a sense of hope for the upcoming generation in that they're going to be able. My children were sort of it washed over them. But you think the next generation will be able to pick out the good bits and discard the dross?
Well, that's what I hope. The national curriculum is changing. When you and I 20 years ago probably thought media studies was a stupid subject to be taught in school, I now think it's actually a vital subject. And I'm pleased that the national curriculum is going to change to give kids a critical understanding of what's behind conspiracy theories and the fact that they're very often money-making opportunities. So that is my hope, that we're living through this experiment. We can't wish it away. These things aren't going to go away. We may ban them from schools, but yeah, probably quite good. But the kids are going to have to learn how to use them responsibly. So it's up to us as adults to show a good example.
Always enjoy speaking with Rory Keflin-Jones. Thanks, Rory. Technology journalist, wrote Always On, Hope and Fear in the Social Smartphone Era. We might come back to that. And there was once a paper called Sunday Sport, and one of its front page was, well remembered, Rory, World War II bomber found on the moon. I knew the journalist who edited that for a while. We were on local papers together. I mean, I know he had an imagination, but that was going some, wasn't it? Let's come back to those prostate tests. I want to check and read your names. Yes, Paul, a few short weeks ago I failed the PSA test with a score of 13.2. Should be closer to 4.2. The weeks that followed have been a whirl. CT scan, MRI scan. The MRI showed anomalies on the prostate. The following week I had two pretty intensive procedures. The first was a camera down my penis and into my bladder, and the second was a prostate biopsy, which was one of the most painful things I ever had. Oh, gosh, you've still not got the results, and I'm waiting another 1 or 2 weeks. Paul, good luck. By the way, I've had that. I won't go into too much detail. Having a camera put down that part of your anatomy, I cannot begin to tell you the pain. Women, you think it's painful to have a child. You wait till you have a camera put down your penis. Well, that'll never happen, of course, unless you're Keir Starmer. Graham in Orpington, I was diagnosed with advanced prostate cancer 13 years ago when my consultant advised I may have had it 10 years or more. It was a fine line between containment and spread of the disease. Anyway, I'm cured. In the last 13-plus years, I've had lots of input on prostate cancer discussions. I understand it costs... Well, you say the NHS £5. It's a little bit more than that, but I sense we all agree it would be a good idea. Martin, most of my mates went for tests. I didn't until encouraged by my wife. Results, 7.7. Remember, we wanted to be about 4, or just over 3. Now under active surveillance, test every 4 months. Last test, 6.6. You're going in the right direction. The moral of the story, listen to your wife. I now tell any older bloke I meet, go have the test. Who's been hanging on the line? Steve in Surbiton. Steve, your story. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I'm actually starting the procedure. I've had the test and they found that I had prostate cancer.
Right.
And to be honest, it's been very quick. About a year and a half ago, I had a prostate test and there was nothing there. And then 14 months later, they found cancer. So this afternoon, I'm in the Marsden. And I'm going to have a 5-session radiotherapy. It's a new thing they're doing. This afternoon, they're putting gold into my prostate. So the rays, when it goes into the prostate, stays within the prostate. But to be honest, I don't know what's going on, because ever since I've got this, I've been chatting to all my mates and stuff like that, and two of them have got prostate cancer.
Seriously?
Yeah, so it just seems to be so rough.
How old are you, sir?
I'm 61.
61, okay. Will you be sure, I'll give you a call and ask how you get on, and I won't ask you to come on air tomorrow, because you'll probably be a little bit exhausted, but just, I've never heard of that test before, so if we may, if you're up to it, someone will call you this afternoon, or possibly tomorrow, so they'll hear how you get on. Steve, thank you. A minute late to the news, because I want to talk about children on their phones, incapable of speech when they arrive at school. Ollie in Kennington. Ollie, good morning.
Hello. Yes, how are you doing?
I'm good. This is outrageous, isn't it? I know we all love our phones and devices and iPads and laptops, but dear God.
Yeah, it is outrageous. But this is what's so fascinating about it. Sorry, if you hear a baby crying, it's because I'm walking around back from school where I've dropped off my other.
Okay.
And where I got on a bus.
Yeah.
So a parent and their child, one in a pram, one on an iPad who must have been about, I don't know, 9 months. And then the parent sitting there swiping on the phone. Now, this is what it comes down to. You cannot blame anyone in this situation, apart from my generation. I'm 42, and the people who didn't grow up with mobile phones but are now raising children with mobile phones in their pockets and hands, is our responsibility, this enormous task, to keep them out of our hands and to denormalise that behaviour. Because all they're doing is looking around. Whether you, every single experience you have now, I see parents in the playground pushing their swing, holding a phone, on the bus, on the tube, everywhere they turn, everywhere the children turn, they see people staring at a black mirror. Now, the problem with this is people have to suddenly become ashamed of it. I'm embarrassed if I'm with my children, I have to use my phone. I try and really tuck it away, hide it from them so they don't see that I'm doing it, because it's such a... Because I know, I want them to experience life. I don't want them to lie on their deathbed and say, oh, how did I spend my life? I spent it staring at my phone. It's just absurd, and we have to denormalise it.
Very strong words. Ollie, a lot of people agreeing with you. Thank you for that. Let's chase a couple of emails. Len in Tower Hill. This is now, there has to be the wake-up call. It's one thing for our teenagers to be obsessed with mobile phones, but pre-primary school aged children? This comes in from Piers in Kent. Instead of banging on about economic non-measures in a budget, why doesn't the Prime Minister say this is not going to continue? We cannot have our primary school age children, well, just going into primary, actually, appears, who are unable to speak. We'll have more on that. Also, coming up later in the hour... tell you about the launch of the new clothing line, I Wool Survive, from a designer who'll only work with wool from sheep that are gay. But how do you discover if you have a gay sheep? It's 9:31, you're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC, making your day brighter. News, Dominic Ellis.
A leading employers group says the Chancellor must steer clear of inflicting more pain on UK businesses in her budget. The head of the CBI will warn later Rachel Reeves must avoid death by a thousand taxes on Wednesday. The White House says talks with Ukraine have made meaningful progress in efforts to end the war with Russia. Talks are due to resume in Switzerland later. And David Cameron has revealed he's been successfully treated for prostate cancer. The former Prime Minister says he was diagnosed earlier this year and has received therapy. LBC weather, cloudy with sunny spells for most, outbreaks of rain in the northeast of England, mild, a high of 11 degrees.
The Budget on LBC.
Unemployment rising, growth flatlining and a £20 billion black hole in public finances.
At the Budget last year, I fixed the foundations. I put our public finances back on a firm footing and began rebuilding our economy.
How will Chancellor Rachel Reeves look at balancing the books?
They have given up trying to get the government to live within its means and they have given up on not raising tax.
Join me, Sheila Fogarty, for The Budget live and in full as the Chancellor sets out her tax and spending plans for the next year.
Then join me, Tom Swarbrick, live from Westminster for expert analysis to help break it all down and, of course, we'll take your calls.
Is my car going to be more expensive to run?
Will my council tax go up?
So what does this mean for my mortgage then?
The Budget, this Wednesday on LBC.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Oh, recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helped advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it, and there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
There's an old Thai saying that roughly translates as, the family who takes the internet on holiday can locate a less crowded beach. Particularly handy, my friend, if it's peak mating season for nippy little crabs. Pack the internet with an eSIM from Aerolone. That's A-I-R-A-L-O.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345-6060-973.
This is what you're saying on the emails then coming to you, Matthew, concerning prostate cancer and that news concerning Lord Cameron Shaun in Southampton. I had my PSA test 10:30 on Saturday. The surgery sent my results at 8:30 this morning. Some surgeries do send in the results. You also share with me that you're at 1.4, which Shaun, whatever age group you are, that's going to be good. Phil in Newcastle, I had a prostate exam and PSA test done privately 7 weeks ago. I was tested on a Monday afternoon. I had the results on Tuesday. My results were high, so they referred me back to my NHS GP. It took 6 weeks to get a referral to a hospital appointment, where it took 24 hours to receive an appointment, which is today. Why it took 6 weeks to send an email to the hospital is beyond me. Phil finishes with the words, fingers crossed. Absolutely, buddy. Let us know how you get on. I hope it goes well for you. Matthew is in King's Cross. Matthew, what are you going to tell me? Good morning.
Oh, hi, Nick. Long-time caller and all that.
Long-time listener, don't worry. No, that's it. That's fine.
I'm quite nervous. Listen, the reason I'm phoning is sincerely to thank you and to thank your program. I listened to a program you put out. It would be in May or early June this year, and it was about a similar thing. It's about the prostate stuff. Mm. And what you were promoting was the going to the PSA test rather than having the digital finger.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, that appeals. So I tried to book one. I had some problems. I had to go through tests. I had to go to an appointment to get the test and everything. It's
you had
very
to go
difficult.
To an appointment to get the appointment, effectively.
I had to have an appointment for... It's very, very difficult. It's just hurdles, really. Obstacles. Anyway, I had the test. And after the test, I had a phone call the next day, and I had a very high PSA level, completely out of the blue. And I wouldn't have gone had it not been for you.
Right. What was your school, your test? Do you remember what you got, what you came in
at? Yeah, the numbers meant nothing to me at the time. I was 16.
Ouch.
And they said 0-4 is in the area where we... So it meant nothing. Anyway, they put me on a fantastic program at UCLH, University Colleges in London.
Yeah, in Bloomsbury, the hospital there.
Bloomsbury, yeah.
Yeah, it's where my son's was born. Yep.
My children were born there. fast forward, I've now had the prostatectomy, as they call it, and this has all happened so quickly. I haven't really got used to the fact that I've had cancer. In fact, I don't feel I have had it, but I have had it. But the reason I'm phoning you particularly is for thank you. But also, I got a call last Friday to say that when they examined the prostate after surgery, so this is several weeks after, they have come back and said that what they call the margins are clear, which pretty much means that the cancer, the tumour hasn't escaped into the rest of the system. So I'm almost home and dry. I've got to have another PSA test to confirm it in a month. Or so.
Brilliant. Okay. How old are you? You've got a youngish voice. How old are you, sir?
I'm 67 now.
Oh, are you? Got a very young voice of 67. Fantastic. Such positive news. As you say, you're virtually there. Let's not say anything because we want to clear that final hurdle. And thank you very much for thanking the show. But anyway, there's many other people. My colleagues always bang on about it as well. But Matthew, that's really positive. It does enforce what we're trying to do. Now, we're having this conversation. If you're just joining us a little bit later this morning, because of it is ultimately good news that David, now Lord Cameron, has been diagnosed with, but has recovered. He will, of course, now be on the watch list, as it were. But he was encouraged to go for his test by his wife, who'd heard a radio interview, a bit there, like the call we just took from Matthew, a bit like Matthew there. Although that interview was with a gentleman called Nick Jones, who founded Soho House. Some of you might be aware of that. And he talked about how he'd taken his test and how he was in recovery. And I think it was the morning that Lord Cameron was going for a medical, and his wife said, come on, bolt a PSA test onto that as well. Get it done. And it was discovered. And, of course, it has been successfully treated. But if you've had a test, why? Brian's in Doncaster. Brian, your story. Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Hope you're well.
I am at the moment. Yeah, I think so. Why am I
right. The PSA test came back as a 10. I've just, in the last hour, had my prostate exam at the doctor's.
Okay.
One side of the prostate is soft, as it should be.
Right.
The other side is slightly hard. So I'm being referred now to the specialist at Doncaster Hospital.
To the hospital, okay.
Next 2 weeks. So fingers crossed, we should be all right.
So you will hope to have an appointment within the next 2 weeks. Is that what you're saying, Brian?
Yes.
And what will they do there? Will they do they take more blood? Do they take a biopsy? What do you understand they'll do?
I would imagine I'll see a specialist and then they'll go down the ultrasound route or whatever it is to see what... it could be nothing. It could be nothing, but the doctor I've seen this morning reassured me that just because you're going to the doctor to see the hospital in 2 weeks, it doesn't mean to say it's cancerous.
No, of course.
But they're just erring on the side of caution. So,
what sort of age are you, Brian?
I'm 68, Nick.
And how many prostate tests have you had before, or is this your first one?
This is my first one, Nick.
Right.
My first one. My wife's pestered me for a while to get one done, but you know what us blokes are like.
Yes, I do. Well, your wife has done absolutely the right thing. Do please let us know how you get on, Brian. The next time you hear us talking about any health matters, I want you to call in. And as you say, I got to Doncaster Hospital, I met the consultant, he or she had a look, took a biopsy, nicked a bit out. Absolutely super. Brian, be well. Thank you for sharing so much, sir. Paul in Ascot. Paul, you're on the radio. You're saying, there we are, another story of a wife badgering her husband. Paul, what are you going to tell me? Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Nick.
Hello.
I was diagnosed in November 2013, almost by accident. I'd been fortunate to go on working until 3 months prior to that and went to my GP because I was feeling very tired, which is unusual. Blood test, PSA was 9.5.
Oh, okay.
Within 2 weeks, an MRI scan, a biopsy, a CT scan, showing that I had aggressive cancer, but not spread to the bones, fortunately. Mm-hmm. And I was referred to an incredible oncologist, Professor Langley, at the St. Luke's Cancer Centre in Royal Surrey. Had incredible treatment, 7 months of hormone therapy, then 5 weeks of radiotherapy, and then followed by brachytherapy, where they insert radioactive seeds into the prostate.
And goodness me. What's the thinking behind that? Sorry, radioactive... why that? That means they absorb the treatment more quickly? Is that the thinking behind that?
I think that's the thinking behind that. Professor Langley described it to me as a trimodal treatment, the hormone treatment to reduce the testosterone, the external beam radiotherapy to get as much of the cancer as possible, and then a final hit with the brachytherapy. And since 2015, I've been volunteering with Prostate Cancer UK, doing awareness talks.
Oh, well done.
And
okay.
Since 2016, one-to-one peer support calls with men who've been recently diagnosed, who are concerned about what the treatment options are.
Might I ask your age bracket, sir?
I'm now 86.
Right, okay.
So I've survived just over 10 years since the diagnosis. Wow. So that's absolutely incredible. I really do appreciate the incredibly helpful oncology team.
How important is it, do you think, lastly, Paul, for awareness of prostate cancer, that Lord Cameron, someone as high profile as Lord Cameron, has said what he said this morning?
I think it's incredibly important. I do these awareness talks that I just described. I can give an example of a talk that I did at HMRC some years ago. We had a fire alarm in the middle of the talk, and we all had to go out into the car park. I was speaking to one of the ladies who attended the talk, and she said, I'm so concerned about my husband. I've already rung my GP to make an appointment for a PSA test. So, you know, we've talked about the importance of partners, wives, I think it's so important that men are made aware through whatever source that they get that PSA test.
Well done with the awareness that you're raising. Fantastic, Paul. Be well. Thank you. Marcel in Paul. Marcel, what can you tell me? Good morning.
Oh, good morning, Nick.
Hello, Marcel.
Just to tell you that my husband, he's 84 now.
Right.
And 15 years ago, he had no symptoms.
Right.
But he got tested. He didn't have the thing in the penis, but in the back passage.
Yes, okay.
And his prostate was 14, very high.
Ah, right, yes.
He had the test done to make sure it hadn't gone to his bones or anything. It was very near the edge, but thank goodness it hadn't gone out.
Right.
But the reason I'm ringing is that he then told his two sons to get checked, and both of them had it as well.
Oh, Lord. How old were the sons?
The sons were probably 45.
Right, okay, because you really should start
48,
testing.
48, between 45 and 50, yes.
Okay, and how did they get on?
They both had it. They're both all right. They're still getting checked.
Right.
My husband doesn't have to be checked now after 15 years.
Right.
And he's fine, but nobody's ever mentioned about getting your sons checked as well. You know, nobody said it's inherited, but it's very strange that both sons had it.
I can tell you from, experience of having worked for a charity, I have no medical training whatsoever, but that is one of those factors that they do take into consideration, and it's a very important one. And again, for white males, there is no actual starting age, but 50 is certainly the age by which you should be having some of those tests. Other groups, such as black men, you should be looking a little bit earlier. Those are the realities. Marcel, thank you for that. 9:45, LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
The Chancellor is set to receive a warning from a leading business group later to change course and avoid inflicting more pressure on UK firms in the budget. The White House says talks with Ukraine have made meaningful progress in efforts to end the war with Russia. And charities are praising the former Prime Minister David Cameron for going public with his prostate cancer diagnosis. LBC weather, cloudy with sunny spells for most. Rain in the northeast, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays on the Surrey stretch of the M25 clockwise up to junction 10 at the A3. It's following an accident where one lane is closed. Also very busy at the Blackwall Tunnel on the north side of the river because the tunnel is still closed southbound for the repair works. There are lengthy queues on the A13, the A12 and on the Aspen Way. Also long delays in Chessington on the A243 Leatherhead Road in both directions, and that's because of the roadworks at the Maldon Rushett crossroads. On the train, South Eastern are running between Paddock Wood and Strood, and the Elizabeth line remains suspended. There's no service between Whitechapel and Stratford, and severe delays on the rest of the line.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
Who should bear the brunt of Wednesday's budget, and what percentage of English people think that the tatty flags on your local lamppost are a bit racist?
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or our new LBC app.
Let's hear from the Chancellor, Geoffrey.
From the Chancellor, Nigel.
Chancellor John.
Norman.
Kenneth.
Gordon.
Alistair.
George.
Philip.
Sajid.
Rishi.
Nadim.
Kwasi.
Jeremy.
And now Rachel. Another year, another budget. Over the past 40 years, we've seen it all. Our experts will continue to filter through the noise and uncertainty, helping you make the most of your tax allowances. Hargreaves Lansdown, helping Britain invest through it all. Capital at risk. Tax rules apply and can change.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
Waitrose presents 3 for 2 on chilled party food.
Kelly, meet everyone.
Hi, nice to meet you.
8 guests, one host who knows exactly what will bring them together.
Food's ready.
Starring number one king prawn toasts with crispy sesame seeds, soft polar bear bao buns bursting with hoisin veg filling, and meltingly tender Wagyu beef mini pies.
Waitrose, the home of food lovers.
Selected lines of stores subject to availability. Prices may vary in Channel Islands, Little Waitrose and Partners and concessions. Cheapest item free.
A message from TfL.
I saw him in the local news a few days after. His name's Rakesh. They had to put him into a coma just because I didn't look again at that turning. He had 2 kids. How did I not see his bike ahead of me? Well, I didn't look again. He didn't make it.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Every investor has a future in mind, whether it's seeing your kids through uni or picturing yourself retiring in Tuscany. The hard part can be knowing how to get there. JP Morgan Personal Investing can help you see the path ahead. With our intuitive app, expert support, and 150 years of JP Morgan's investing experience, you can start making more informed investment decisions today. Search JP Morgan Personal Investing. Invest with clarity. Capital at risk.
My beans have been to Mexico. They once went to Peru. My beans, they flew to Portugal, then went to Tuvalu. My beans were with me in Italy, then came with me to Greece. I slurped their sauce on Spanish shores. I nibbled them in Nice. My Heinz beans have seen the world. They've traveled far and wide because they are, as we all know, too good to leave behind.
Okay, let me stop you there, sir. You still have to check them into the hold.
Oh, all right then. Honestly.
Beans means Heinz.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
As we've been talking about such serious matters, the economy hanging in rags, serious illness, children arriving in primary school who can't speak, to try and make your day a little bit brighter, not for news values, but just as if it's news that makes you say gee whiz, this has to be the story of the day. Let me introduce you to I Wool Survive, a new fashion line. Wool from Gay Sheep, I'll beat it, has made its debut appearance at a New York fashion show as part of a collection campaigning to save the animals from slaughter. It's been launched by Michael Schmidt, the designer. By the way, based in Los Angeles, he styles the looks of folks such as Madonna and Cher. He's joined with Rainbow Wool, a German non-profit group that rescues non-mating sheep, and launched I Wool Survive, telling the New York Times, the idea is selling that homosexuality is not only part of the human condition, but of the animal world. That puts the lie to this concept that being gay is a choice, it's a part of nature. He already reports booming sales. Now, apparently, and this is what interested me, and can you believe there's no gay sheep experts out there? What a surprise that is. That you apparently some rams just have no interest whatsoever in mating with other females, and they like to run with other rams. This story features in today's Daily Telegraph, by the way. And it's, honestly, there's a picture of a man waving a rainbow flag surrounded by sheep. And now, as I've told you, I know a lot about sheep, so I can tell you that there's a Cotswold in there, there's a Soe sheep in there, there's a Jacob, definitely a Jacob sheep in there, with their distinctive black and white patches. And now John Humphries is retired, I am the only breakfast presenter who can shear a sheep. But I've never had a gay sheep, or worked with a gay sheep, or shorn a gay sheep, or done the other things that those of you, I won't say it on air, but you all know what you do before you shear the sheep. I've told you this many times before, that's how you learn to sheep. You start at the other end with a sheep and you clear that up. So if you are a farmer and you have farmed sheep, have you had... Because I have to tell you, every ram I ever... How many rams do we have? Moses was one of the rams. Alf was a ram after Alf Ramsey. We called ram Alf. That was one of my brothers. That's such a funny name. What are we going to call this ram? Let's call him Alf. What do you want to call him Alf for, Simon? Alf Ramsey. Oh, God, yeah, that's brilliant. Call him Alf. So we had Moses, we had Alf. I think we might have called him Jacob, the other one, because we had Jacob's sheep, I think. Anyway, those three... If you have worked with those, do let me know. It lifts the mood a little bit. Because, as I say, a lot of the news has been disappointing, not least as regards our children. In this hour, we spoke about how primary school children arrive at school unable to speak. They're wizards on computers, but not at all. And in the previous hour, it was the number of children, 250,000, leaving primary school obese or on the verge of being obese. This comes in Anne in St Albans. A healthy child has a layer of fat for a good reason. It provides nutrients for a growing body and brain. It's not advisable to try and put children on diets to get rid of it. Excess fat, on the other hand, is not healthy and can be reduced by sensible eating and exercise. Chris says the body positivity movement has a lot to answer for, as it's teaching people to be comfortable with being fat. While it might sound like a positive message, it isn't. Steve in Hayes, don't stress the child as it transitions into secondary school. As your caller says, you should have sorted out the child's excess weight several years before. It is poor child-centric parenting. And lastly, this comes in, lastly on this, I'll come back to your calls on the Lord Cameron story. Zoe says, the issue of child obesity is hugely underestimated. The pressure it puts on the NHS in future years, the mental cruelty from children bullying so-called fat kids. Parents need to take responsibility for it now. Eating healthy can be cheap. Eggs, for instance, homemade soup, which is what I had as a poor child. Also, stopping sugary drinks. My son had issues keeping still and focusing in school. I made the teacher let my son drink water at his desk, and surprise, surprise, his brain was hydrated, his focus improved dramatically. Food is a survival skill. It's not taught properly in schools. Parents, wake up. You're harming your children and breeding bad habits. All right, let's come to the Lord Cameron story news, which you've heard, of course, the story earlier this morning. He's had prostate cancer, but he's been successfully treated. Robert in Lacey Green, you're on the radio, Robert. What are you going to tell me? Good morning.
Oh, hi, Nick. Sorry, I've just been thrown by the whole gay sheep thing.
It is a shocker, but news is anything that makes you say gee whiz, or in this case...
We had sheep, and they were just super randy. They'd have a go at everything, so, I'm not entirely...
What sort of sheep did you have?
We had Schwarbless, which are a Dutch milking sheep.
Oh, how interesting. I don't know.
Yeah, but okay. The rams were super at it, and everything in there. Yeah, so I don't think they were gay. I just think they were randy, but there you go.
Alf and Moses, nothing would stop them. Anyway, let's talk perhaps more importantly about Lord Cameron. Good news about him.
Yes. So I had my radical prostatectomy 5 years ago this week.
Right.
And
Find out? Was it your wife or girlfriend or partner?
No, we got a bad family record of cancer.
Right.
I was kind of on it. My levels weren't particularly high, but my doctor knew what the family situation was, etc. So he said, look, I think you just go and get the biopsy done, and it was positive. So I had the
5 years. So what do they do? They check you annually now, Robert, or what?
Yeah, just annually.
And everything's under control.
Everything's under control. I think it's 0.1 or something like that.
Wow, that's a belt. Finally, caller, something I asked an earlier caller. It's important when people like Lord Cameron come forward and this something like this, isn't it? The awareness is extraordinary.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's to start off with, it's a simple blood test. So,
yes, and it doesn't hurt at all. Robert, Well done. 5 years. Let's make it 10, 15, 20 and 25. Robert, be well. Thank you. And as a fellow sheep farmer of sorts, Garth in Chalfont St. Peter. Garth, what are you going to tell me? Good morning.
Yeah, hello there, Nick. Is it still Nick Ferrari of Dartford?
How did you know that?
Well, I'm a journalist.
So my late father's press agency, wasn't me, was Ferrari of Dartford. My God, Garth, that really is. Congratulations. Yeah. Yes, well done, sir. Now, what about anyway, you? How are you? You'll be of senior years.
I'm okay, yeah. I'm very senior, yeah. I'm just touched 80, actually.
Congratulations.
But I actually have had prostate cancer treated, and it's all down to my lovely wife, Mr. Cameron.
Well done.
Basically, she set up she's a former nurse, and You heard from someone at a golf club that they have this test regularly at the golf club. Mm. It's called the Graham Fulford Trust. They're brilliant.
Right.
And she set it up at the golf club in Northwood where I play golf, and she plays golf. And she's they had tests over the last 3 years, and they've picked up at least more than 20 people at the golf club who have actually had to go to have treatment, etc.
Incredible.
I got into it very quickly because was setting it up, and you had to go online to fill in the form to actually go and get the test done.
Yeah.
And she said, go and have it. Can you get onto your computer and just check that I'm doing it the right way? And I said, oh, no, that's all right. But anyway, she said, no, do it. So I went on, and I actually entered to have a test done. But about just over a year earlier, I'd had a very negative prostate test at the doctor's.
But then the golf club changed that around.
Absolutely. And I then ended up with a 9.7 heart reading. And about 2 days later, I was seeing my GP. And within a week, I was seeing someone set up an oncologist to actually treat the cancer and probably save my life. So.
Well, we're going to leave it on that positive note. Thank you. And Garth, what a memory. Just to explain, why on earth would you say Ferrari? In the days when they used to set what are called press agencies, someone would take a certain area. So there was Pick of York, as in John Pick. There was Ferrari of Dartford, as in my late father. It's what he did when he came out of the army. Indeed, the first desk that he set the age on is my desk at home now, which he set up in 1946, maybe 47. So that's what Garth was talking about. Right, I'm sorry I haven't got time for calls from Victor, from Eddie, from George, or any of the others. If there's anything that's come out of the show, let's face it, although it started, it was incredibly negative. There is a positive out of this, because whatever you think about Lord Cameron politically, it's tremendous that he's put his head above the parapet. And how many times have we heard that it is your wife or your girlfriend or your partner or whatever? So if anybody goes and has a test, if just one of you has, then it's been worth all the discussion. And thanks, mostly blokes, for sharing so much. But that's it for today. If you missed any of the show, listen back on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. You can stay up to date with all the latest news and opinions, put your news categories in the order you want, pause and rewind live radio, and listen to a range of podcasts. Download the all-new official LBC app for free from your App Store now. That's it. James O'Brien is waiting on the other side of the news on LBC. I'm with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and there is actually, would you believe, a class element to that prostate cancer story as well, with people from working class backgrounds even less likely than other men to present with potential health problems. We may have a look at the whys and the wherefores of that. I'm tempted to start with pensioners. I have a feeling that until that budget is finally unveiled on Wednesday, and has there ever been more of a hokey-cokey flavoured precursor to a budget than this one, that we will be looking at various iterations of the question, who should bear the brunt? We all accept there are holes that need to be filled, there are problems that need to be fixed, and there are bills that need to be met. But who should be paying them? Today, we look at pensioners and possibly people with expensive homes.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the business secretaries apologise for the intense speculation ahead of the Chancellor's upcoming budget. Peter Kyle has said sorry, but has argued it's an important moment for the country. There's been multiple reports over what Rachel Reeves could announce on Wednesday, including changes to income tax. Chairman of the Nighttime Industry Association, Sasha Lord, told LBC yesterday that he's holding his breath.
The hospitality industry is the fifth biggest sector in the whole of the UK, with a third largest
largest employer, and we are one of the most taxed sectors. And to put this into perspective, the average pint in Greater Manchester is about £6.50. In London, I think it's about £7.50. Once you've paid your alcohol duty, you paid your VAT, you've paid for your member staff, your utility bills, the actual product of the beer itself, the profit left on a pint now is 10p.
A leading business group will urge the Chancellor later to spare business from further tax rises on Wednesday. The head of the CBI will use a speech to urge Rachel Reeves to tackle growth obstacles instead. The White House says talks with Ukraine have made meaningful progress in efforts to end the war with Russia. US and Ukrainian officials say they've identified clear next steps following discussions over the weekend. The joint statement lacks detail, but says any peace deal must uphold Ukraine's sovereignty. Talks are continuing. Charities have praised David Cameron for going public with his prostate cancer diagnosis. The former Prime Minister has revealed he was successfully treated for the disease earlier this year. Lord Cameron says he now wants to add weight to calls for screening to be offered to men at high risk. Oncologist Professor Pat Price has told LBC she hopes it encourages more men to come forward.
Men, not very good. Come on, chaps, you can do it. You can think about your health. If the screening comes out at high risk, need it, trust them. Trust the science. They will do that if it saves lives. If it saves lives, go and get the test if suggested.
Senior officials at the BBC are due to give evidence to MPs regarding the recent row over editorial standards. The corporation's chairman will appear alongside board members at the Commons Culture Committee this afternoon. And Tottenham's boss Thomas Franks apologised to the club's fans after their 4-1 defeat to Arsenal in the North London derby. Arsenal are now 6 points clear at the top of the Premier League. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 25 at £95.65. The pound buys $1.30 and €1.13. LBC weather cloudy with sunny spells for most. Some outbreaks of rain for the northeast of England and a milder day, a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
The EasyJet Black Friday sale is now on. Get up to 10% off flights. Long weekend in Florence, anyone? Or maybe a ski trip to Switzerland? Plus extra offers throughout the week. Book now at easyjet.com. Get out there. Selected dates, sale ends 11pm the 2nd of December. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 3 minutes after ten. A very good morning indeed to you. And interesting times, isn't it? A budget on Wednesday. I don't know why. I am not self-referential or self-obsessed enough to do an entire phone-in on why I am much more interested in this budget than any budget I've ever been more interested in before. But you know what I do when I claim, somewhat tongue-in-cheek, that I'm not self-obsessed enough to do a certain inquiry at 10 o'clock in the morning. I pretend I'm interested in what you think. So what I could do is say, is it just me, or are you more interested in this budget coming up on Wednesday than you've ever been in any budget before? And then you ring me and we try and work out why we are both more interested in the budget that's coming up on Wednesday without me actually letting it slip that I'm actually much more fascinated by why on earth, after 2 decades of doing this job and always knowing that if the Tories are in power, which they have been for almost all of those 2 decades, then I will come out of the budget better off than I went into it. But when Labour are in power, as a sort of high-earning, expensive homeowner, then I will hopefully come out a little bit worse off. And how weird does that make me? That word hopefully in that sentence, because what appears to be the order of the day this week is that we are supposed to be forming an orderly queue to say that it shouldn't be us. A nice orderly queue. I mean, today you've got the CBI saying, not us, Chancellor, not us. You heard in the news bulletin there, the hospitality industry saying, not us. And these are all valid points, by the way. I'm not for a minute poo-pooing them or suggesting that they should do a Gavin Williamson, which means they should go away and shut up. I am pointing out that everybody is putting their hands up and saying, not me, Gov. I can't wear this. It's outrageous. Not me. Could make a little list, couldn't we? Who's already on that list? High earners? Taxpayers? Almost all? Well, no. High earners, whether you like it or not. If you're in a certain category, then you count as a high earner, even if you feel you're struggling to make ends meet. Industry? Hospitality, which has its own little subset of industry? expensive homeowners, the mansion tax that looks like it is going to happen. I've got more details on that for you shortly. I mean, everybody really. Nobody. There is a group called the something, is it the Millionaires for Higher Tax or something like that? I like the look of them. Patriotic millionaires using, which is very rare in the current discourse, an accurate and helpful definition of patriotism, which means wanting what is best for your fellow citizens, your fellow subjects in our case. So it should be an act of patriotism to pay your tax proudly, if not always happily. Some of these foreign-born billionaires who are quitting the country because of our tax regimes, I would argue, are not displaying a great degree of patriotism for the countries that have welcomed them and allowed them to build lives here. But, of course, you're not allowed to question the wisdom of immigration policy when it applies to billionaires, such as the direction of traffic when public discourse is defined by right-wing media owned by billionaires. So some poor soul working as a nurse or a delivery driver stoned them! But somebody heading to Dubai because they don't want to pay their fair share into the country that has provided them with the life that they sought and quite often the workforce that they needed. Oh, that's outrageous. That's proof that Rachel Reeves is well dodged. All these people who are, I mean, if it's even true that they're leaving the country, it is to avoid paying their fair share of what is needed to put the economy back on an even keel. The economy that was, of course, kebabbed by precisely the administrations that the same media told you to vote for the best part of a decade and a half. Who else is on that list? Who else is sort of saying, look, because does everybody acknowledge that something must be done? I love that phrase. Something must be done. It's the original fig leaf, isn't it? What? Don't ask me what. God forbid. Something must be done. What? Well, we need to save money or raise money. How much money could we save by making life on the welfare state even more parlous and perilous than it is already? Oh, don't be ridiculous. I know of someone who knows someone who told me about someone who once heard of someone who went to school with someone who married someone who then met someone in the library who lives a life of Riley on benefits. And that proves that they're all swinging the lead and that the country's economic woes could be solved overnight. Overnight. Simply by making it even harder to live on welfare in this country. The alternative, of course, is to raise more money. To raise more money. How do we do that? Well, we raise it through tax. There's no other way to do it. Sympathetic to wealth tax arguments, but they are a little simplistic. The mansion tax, as it will no doubt be known, is a form of wealth tax, and I am warm towards the idea, even though I will be on the hook for it. And income tax, nibbling at the edges, recalibrating without actually raising it. What they do is freeze the thresholds. So say that you start paying a higher tax rate at, let's just say for the sake of argument, £100,000. If that doesn't go up with at least inflation, then more people will move into that threshold, will move over that threshold every year as their wages go up, but the threshold at which you start paying a different tax rate does not. And that, of course, brings us to pensioners who also fall into this category, not if they are living exclusively on the state